On small boats, I wonder why. In other news, the full horror of an investigation into national maternity and neonatal investigation.
It seems as though it is heading the same way that other reviews have gone in the past, leading to some recommendations, but no teeth.
That's maternity campaigner Rebecca Matthews saying the Amos review, Baroness Amos, appears to lack substance. All change and coming down the line, the future of British trains arrives. Government reforms how the railways are run. The nurse who's won a harassment claim against the NHS and... Paramount get into the big deal to try and buy Warner Brothers with an offer they hope they can't refuse. Those stories and more after the news at 7 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, an interim report has found the scale of unacceptable maternity care in England is extremely concerning. Baroness Amos, who is leading the National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation, says the situation is much worse than she anticipated. She's warned of systemic failures causing preventable tragedies. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, ordered the inquiry earlier this year.
Crucially, the investigation team, in terms of referenced, will be co-produced with the victims of maternity scandals. The investigation will also pull together the recommendations from the other reviews that have taken place.
Baroness Amos is expected to publish her full findings and recommendations next year. Ukraine's leader is due to present a revised peace plan to the US. Volodymyr Zelensky has again ruled out surrendering any land to Russia after meeting key European leaders in London yesterday. Kiev is under continued pressure from the White House to agree a swift deal with Moscow. Several danger-to-life weather warnings have been issued for Storm Bram. Gusts of up to 90 miles per hour are expected in parts of western Scotland later today. A number of flood warnings are also in place across the rest of Scotland, Wales and southwest England. Campaigners have renewed calls for cyclists to face the same red light penalties as drivers. An LBC survey has found fewer than a quarter of riders stopped at a busy pedestrian crossing in London during the morning rush hour. Running a red light on a bicycle carries a fine of up to £50 compared to £100 and 3 points for drivers. Matthew Briggs' wife Kim died after being hit by a bicycle in 2016.
Until this law is passed, they are almost above the law. You know, it is, I've said several times before that the astonishing thing is that cycling is almost literally a lawless activity.
Nationalised trains will be painted in red, white and blue as part of the rollout of Great British Railways. The flag-themed colour scheme will be used on trains at stations and on GBR's website. Three operators have returned to public control in the last year, with more expected to follow in 2026. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning. At 96.45, it closed down 21 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, wet and windy for most parts of the country this morning as the storm moves in. The most severe conditions in western Scotland, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Tuesday, December the 9th, the facts and the evidence they did not want you to know about the horrific story involving two teenage asylum seekers from Afghanistan raping an innocent 15-year-old schoolgirl. They'd only been in the UK for some months, and of course, they were staying in taxpayer-funded accommodation in Warwickshire. What a course they are. No wonder they didn't want you to know the full details, but you will hear, and then we'll take the conversation on. Meanwhile, inching towards a peace, the signs actually aren't very good. Headlines saying the deal is on the brink of collapse, but speaking from Downing Street yesterday, Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer told Ukraine's President Zelensky the UK will stand firm with his nation.
We stand with Ukraine, and if there's to be a ceasefire, it needs to be a just and lasting ceasefire.
Into health matters, the nurse who won her own harassment case against the NHS. This was over a doctor using female changing facilities. You may recall that story up in Scotland. We'll give you the result of that. In other news, a flu pandemic sweeping the country, closing some schools and children being told not to sing in assembly and wear masks. Yes, when have you heard that before? Well, here's the chief executive of the Mid-Yorkshire NHS Trust, Brent Kilmurray, telling LBC...
Obviously, it's a busy time of year for us. We're preparing for industrial action as well in the next couple of weeks. So clearly, you know, it's definitely worth people thinking about whether they really need to come.
As you heard on the LBC News Bulletin, a radical new look for our railways. You'll hear from the Transport Secretary. Is it on track, or will it simply be Thomas the Tanked Engine? And... known for box office hits such as Harry Potter, but who's going to have the magic deal to buy them, Netflix or Paramount? That's in our regular look at the world of business in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The case that was heard up in Warwickshire yesterday, the Afghan asylum seekers, how they dragged a 15-year-old girl into the bushes before raping her. Initially, you were never meant to know their names, but one organisation, the Daily Mail, lodged an appeal against that, and credit to Judge Sylvia De Petodarno, who agreed. So we must thank the judge for that. Then we were told, and I think this probably makes sense, we can't see the video of the ordeal this woman went through because she filmed some of it, because it could have led to mass rioting. We were also, initially, not to be told that they were Afghan arrivals on the small boat crossings. Been in journalism a while. Facts are quite important. Who, what, where, when, why, how. Fortunately, because of this judge allowing much of it to be heard, we can give you a better report. And here's LBC's Midlands reporter, Luke Shanahan, with all the details. Luke.
Morning, Nick. Yes, 17-year-olds Jan Johanzeb and Isra Nirzal pleaded guilty in October to the rape of a 15-year-old girl in a park in Leamington Spa on the 10th of May. She'd been separated from her friends in Newbold Common, a country park just outside the town, when Johanzeb dragged her off into the bushes as she shouted again and again, begging him to let go. She was able to record some video on her phone of the moment she was abducted, and in it you can hear Johanzeb telling his fellow defendant Nirzal in Pashto to follow as he leads her to a more secluded part of the park, shushing her cries for help, and then you see him put a hand over her mouth to silence those cries. The prosecution say the footage is highly distressing, and what followed was horrific. The young girl eventually escaped, and a member of the public came to help her, advising her to call the police and then waiting with her until she was safe. In a victim impact statement, the girl, who can't be identified for legal reasons, said, "The day I was raped changed me as a person. Now every time I go out, I don't feel safe." We can identify the two defendants after multiple applications to the judge to lift their anonymity, despite them both being younger than 18. The judge said reporting restrictions in this case could lead to speculation, which might see innocent people targeted. The judge also told the pair they had betrayed the interests of genuine refugees. Both defendants came to the UK as unaccompanied child asylum seekers and were staying in taxpayer-funded accommodation in Warwickshire at the time of the attack. Nirzal arrived here in November last year, having fled the Taliban. He's supposedly still seeking asylum in this country, actually, intending to make a life here after his release, following his 9-year and 10-month sentence, which is to be served in youth detention and then prison when he comes of age. He pleaded guilty a day before his 17th birthday. That's the cut-off point for automatic deportation for foreign criminals, although the judge did invite the government to recommend deportation in his case. Johanzeb arrived here in January when, during a third attempt to cross the channel by small boat, he was picked up by the Coast Guard. His birthday was set as the 1st of January after age assessments were made upon his arrival here, so he missed the boat, as it were, on avoiding automatic deportation. He was given a 10-year and 8-month sentence, and the court heard yesterday he's already been served with deportation papers, Nick.
Luke Shanahan reporting. So someone arrives here and they can't even attempt to tell us their birthday? We have to give them the birthday of the 1st of January. That seems incredible. So the elder of the two, who seems to have been the leader of the rape, will face being deported. But as Luke Shanahan just explained, because the younger of the two missed pleading guilty one day before turning 17, makes him one day too young to qualify. His barrister in court made the suggestion that would allow the younger of the rapists to make a life for himself in this country when he is eventually released. I should tell you that counsel in both cases argued that the video should not be made available, and it will not be made available to the public, and I understand that. I'd have no desire to see that. But also they argued that it shouldn't be made known that they were asylum seekers who arrived from Afghanistan on a boat. Why don't we have the right to know that? Ivan Sampson is the principal solicitor at Privatus, a firm that specialises in this, and joins me now. Commentators are already suggesting this increases the desire among some politicians, such as the Conservatives and Reform UK, to seek to leave the ECHR. In practice, how easy or otherwise would that be? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It really makes no difference in this case, because even if we were to repeal the Human Rights Act, which is what puts the ECHR into effect in our laws in this country, even if we repealed it, it wouldn't help us in this case, because we have no terms agreement with Afghanistan. So if that position remains the same when these gentlemen are released, I'm afraid they're going to continue to live here.
I suppose you call them gentlemen, Mr. Sampson, but do go ahead. So the judge later is confirming that she would recommend to the Home Secretary deportation, by the way, both of them. That will get nowhere, then?
No. I mean, and also, the automatic deportation doesn't really make a difference, because the Secretary of State has the powers to deport anybody on the grounds of not conducive to public good. So even despite automatic deportation not coming into effect, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make them into calling them gentlemen. That's just the way I speak, so I apologise to your listeners.
That's all right. It's a horrendous
crime.
Pedophiles, to me.
And really, I mean, this is the thing, that they're probably going to be...
I don't understand, Mr. Sampson, and obviously you're a specialist in the law, and I'm very grateful for your input, sir, but why are we stuck with two Afghan pedophiles?
That we have no returns agreements. And then, so what do you do with them? Where do you send them to? If an Afghanistan, we don't recognise the Afghanistani government, the Taliban. And since 2021, when they came back in power, there have been no returns. Now, before that, they'd actually ramped up returns to Afghanistan, they being the European Union, including the UK. But in 2015 and 2017, something like about 10,000 Afghans were returned successfully. But since the Taliban came to power...
Is it your belief, then, that effectively, if you don't mind this language, we're stuck with these two? There's nothing legally we can do.
Exactly. And there's also the principle of non-refoulement. So even if Afghans agreed to take them back, let's just say they'd take them back, if they can prove, after risk assessment, that their lives are in danger... We still can't send them out. So, I'll give you an example. Suppose one of them turns to Christianity or decides that they're gay. There'd be grounds for resisting any attempt to take them to Canada.
Did you agree, lastly, the fact that initially we were to be denied knowledge that they were asylum seekers from Afghanistan, would you support action such as that? Do you agree with the judge that we did deserve to know?
I think the judge is right, but I mean that's a political... comment, and I'm really not want to do that.
All right, OK, I understand that, but I'm very grateful for your legal background. Thanks, Ivan Sampson, principal solicitor at the firm Privatus, that specialises in this field, 13 after 7. Let's get in and among your reactions on this. Kevin is in Basingstoke. Kevin, so we're stuck with two Afghan paedophiles.
Nick, every time there's a story about an asylum seeker that's raped somebody, you always report on it, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you don't think a 15-year-old gay being dragged into a bush and being forced to perform sexual acts on two 17-year-olds who've been living in taxpayer-funded accommodation having arrived a few months ago. I'm sorry you don't see that as a story. Do give me a lesson in news. I'm so eager.
Here is the story, but you always fade me down or talk over me.
No, I'm interested, because clearly your news knowledge is superior. Go ahead.
Over me when I phone in.
Go ahead. Why is it not a story?
It is a story, but they're all stories, but you only report on it, and it's always your only first story when it is an Afghanistan that has committed rape, isn't it? Always. without a doubt.
No, it was an Ethiopian involved in sex attacks, not rape. It was Ethiopian involved in sex attacks in Epping. It wasn't Afghans then.
No, but you only report on it when it's somebody like an Afghan, somebody's from Afghanistan. Otherwise, you just don't report on it, do you?
No, you're so wrong. Do you remember the tragic murder of Brianna Jay?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that was British people, two British youngsters, and we reported that extensively. So you're wrong, Kevin, you are wrong. I've just reminded you of the extensive coverage we did of the Brianna Jay story to prove
you
that you're wrong.
Do that.
A simple apology
you
will
don't
do.
Don't normally do that.
Oh, just nonsense. Off you go. That's it. You got a red for today. Utter nonsense. Talk again next week. You're barred for this week. But as in the Christmas spirit, you can come back closer to Christmas. I will allow that, Kevin. Take more calls on that. Also coming up after the news, the NHS nurse who has successfully decided, or shown, I'm so sorry, that she was bullied by the NHS. The nurse, Sandy Peggy's solicitor, Margaret Gribben, said outside Edinburgh following the tribunal hearing.
The tribunal's findings that Fife Health Board harassed Sandy Peggy is a huge win for a tenacious and courageous woman standing up for her sex-based rights.
7:15 now, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The head of a review of NHS maternity care in England has warned the situation is much worse than she anticipated. Ukraine is set to share a revised peace plan with the White House after again ruling out giving territory to Russia. And heavy rain and strong winds are expected to cause disruption across Scotland, Wales and southwest England as Storm Bram moves in. A high today of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So the roads are very wet this morning. Lots of surface spray around reducing visibility, so do take extra care. There are lengthy delays on the M40 southbound to Junction 3 at Loudwater, and that's because of an accident where two lanes stay closed. Very busy on the A1 in Highgate. This is the Archway Road in both directions, and that's also after an accident. On the Underground, the Metropolitan Line remains suspended between Rickmansworth and Northwood. There are severe delays on the District and Bakerloo Line. On the trains, Chiltern Railways can't run between Marylebone and Amersham, and Great Northern and Thames Link services are delayed by about 20 minutes via Stevenage after a train broke down earlier.
LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. E, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
TRIP. Think, do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Full Disclosure with James O'Brien.
Join me for thoughtful conversations with fascinating people from the worlds of politics, news and entertainment.
There's no national procurement system for schools or hospitals or old people's homes.
There just should be.
We could love our farmers much more by having a Ministry of Food that we had in the war.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:19, coming to more of your reactions, Antonio, on the case for telling you it was heard up a court in Warwickshire yesterday. Quick look at the front page as well. You pay your money and you take your choice as to what success or otherwise we're looking at with these peace talks. For the Daily Telegraph, Trump's peace deal on brink of collapse, Zelensky hits back. for The Guardian, a critical moment. European leaders rally behind Ukraine, and it's also the front page of The Times. Deal to unlock £100 billion for Ukraine within days. We are giving you more details on that, excuse me, later in this hour. The Daily Mail has on its front page the disturbing story that Hugh Edwards, they say, could be plotting a comeback. This is the disgraced newsreader, of course, as he puts a rather carefully photographed, possibly even airbrushed, I don't know, picture of himself up online. There are concerns over that. The Financial Times goes with the Paramount arrival for the Warner Brothers deal. They say they gate crash the Netflix deal. We'll give you more on that in about 15 minutes' time or so. The LBC app has the peace talks as well at a critical stage, going with similar language. That's also the front page of City AM. And let's just pick one other story at random, and this is the Sun newspaper telling us that the England star Ivan Toney has been arrested for an alleged headbutt. I hope we heard all that. Following an alleged assault at a bar in London, and they have some video evidence of that. Coming to you, Antonio, in just a second. Let's pick up on what you're saying concerning the arrival of these people and the way they're being dealt with in court. Lee says, I wonder if that caller would want you to report it with his daughter who'd been dragged into the bush and forced to perform sexual acts. Bruce makes a good point. The UK spent £37 billion on the war in Afghanistan to improve the situation. Thank you, Tony Blair. And we still can't even deport these terrible people back to that country. The poor young woman, where is her justice for the ordeal she suffered and will never be able to forget? Well, she did tell the court, of course, that she sadly now has completely changed her life. She's very nervous, has very little confidence when she goes out. Same subject, this just says, Mark in Gravesend. This, Nick, is why people protest. The sooner a new government is in, with teeth, the better. Antonio is in Knightsbridge. Your reaction to this story, Antonio? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Hope you're well.
Yeah, not bad at all. Thank you.
Good. To me, it seems quite simple. The anonymity, they left their country because they were fearing for their lives. That girl now fears for her life. So that when that happens, their anonymity should be removed. And they should be sent back immediately.
Well, fortunately, the judge agreed with you. How awful that, A, we would never have known their names because they were 17. B, we would never know their backgrounds, i.e. they'd arrived in months ago, paid for by taxpayers from Afghanistan.
But why can't they send them back if they've committed a crime? If they've come here in fear for their lives and it's a new country, and they come straight in and they abuse it, they're gone.
Because we deem Afghanistan not to be a safe country, so we cannot, by our laws, deport people to an unsafe country.
And as far as that girl's concerned, she's not in a safe place either.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they've taken away her safety.
What a good point. It's so frustrating. As you heard from the lawyer, and he's skilled in these matters, this is his, you know, day job, his bread and butter. There's nothing we can do. We are saddled with two...
Yeah, but sometimes the law's an ass sometimes because it's obvious when you commit crimes in other places that you're supposed to be living to save you, you lose all your rights, you know, because if you're going to go into... That poor girl, you know, she must be walking and looking over her shoulder every 2 minutes.
She is, unfortunately. Antonio, thank you. Robert in St. Neots, your reaction, Robert. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
Grand, thank you. What do you make of this story? It's a horrible one, horrific one, I was told yesterday.
It's disgraceful, isn't it?
It is, sir.
Well, that girl's life's ruined, isn't it?
Yes, sadly.
She will never be the same. She'll probably never look at a man the same.
Nope.
We was watching it on the TV last night. It came up on the news. And my wife, we've got no issue or agenda with people. My wife is from Punjabi parents.
Oh, right, yes.
I can't see why it is, if they're not British nationals, they're not just deported. I understand the fact that we're deporting them to effectively what's a war zone.
I know.
But they've come over here, we're giving them a chance. I mean, we've got to send a message.
We're paying for them to stay in, we're paying their rent. It's extraordinary. Oh, and then months later, they rape a 15-year-old.
Absolutely. I think it's beyond words, isn't it, really?
Do you think this government's tuned in to the... Because the phones are ringing here now like you wouldn't believe. And some of them are to tell me that I'm wrong, by the way. Some of them tell me that I shouldn't be focusing on it. Why aren't I talking about all the rapes? And that's a valid point, but I think there's real anger that we are importing, in this case, we're importing Afghan rapists.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think this government's a waste of space. But I think it's previous governments before that and whatever's gone on before that as well. So this isn't just a new thing, is it? This has gone on for years now, like previous, the Conservative government, the Blair government, everyone.
You're right. They're all culpable on this, I'm afraid. Robert, have a safe day. Thank you. 7:24. More on this in a moment. Now, what of the nurse who had to take her own organisation, the NHS, to trial? This is a nurse who objected to sharing a female changing room with a transgender doctor, now winning a claim for harassment in her employment tribunal, a case against a health board. Sandy Peggy was suspended by NHS Fife after complaining about having to share a changing room with Dr. Beth Upton. This was back on Christmas Eve 2023. She was placed on special leave after the doctor, a transgender medic, made an allegation of bullying and harassment and cited concerns about patient care. The nurse in turn lodged a claim against NHS Fife and Dr. Upton using the Equality Act of 2010, including sexual harassment, harassment related to a protected belief, indirect discrimination and victimisation. A judge was heard it, as we say, the tribunal has found for her on some of those cases. Helen Joyce is Director of Advocacy at Sex Matters, the human rights charity, joins me now. How significant is this to the work you and your colleagues are seeking to do? Good morning.
Good morning. It was a very important case because it really broke through for a lot of people. Sandy's a nurse. She was 50. She met a person who the tribunal agreed was a male person in his 20s in the changing room, the women's changing room, in on Christmas Eve when she was flooding. She had menstrual flooding as part of her menopause. And she said to this person that she thought he shouldn't be there. He reported her. The hospital put her through absolute hell for about 2 years. And the tribunal has now accepted that the way it dealt with that complaint was terrible. But she's really brought the issue to public notice. The issue is that the actual ruling itself has a lot of very strange elements to it. The tribunal decided that the way that Sandy brought this up, which was to say it there in the changing room, was not acceptable. It accepted that she had made the transgender medic, so that's a male person over 6 foot tall in his 20s, she's 55 foot four, that she had made him scared. And it also completely garbled the Supreme Court judgment of April, in which it was clarified that for the purposes of the Equality Act, sex really means biological sex, which should mean that changing rooms for female people are for female people only. So there's a lot to unpack there, and I think it's quite likely it will be appealed.
Oh, right. Oh, I was going to ask you, what do you hope comes out of this, Helen? But presumably you have to gird your legal loins for the challenge yet.
Well, I mean, it's not our case. We're observers. I think that Sandy is going to appeal. Yeah, yeah. Yes, absolutely. It's extraordinary how little attention people are paying to the fact that the Supreme Court, the apex court, which makes the law in this country when it speaks, it has said really, really clearly that for the purposes of the Equality Act, and the Equality Act covers single-sex spaces, the only way it's lawful to put up a sign that says female only is because when the Equality Act says you can do it in places like changing rooms. The judgment is 300-and-something pages long. Oh, I must admit I have not finished it.
No, sure.
I read as much as I could yesterday, as well as the summary. The judgment goes dozens and dozens of pages of older laws, trying to find some precedent for the idea that it might be okay to tell some male people that they can use the female space. But the Supreme Court's really clear.
Let me ask you this lastly. Do we know what happens now as regards in changing facilities at the Victoria Hospital? This was nearly 2 years ago, of course.
Well, I mean, since the Supreme Court judgment, they've actually changed their policy, as far as I know. They've said that, yes, female means female only. So all of this should never have happened. Really, it's extraordinary. The judge had very hard words for the way that NHS Fife dealt with this. You know, in all its horrendous, dragging her through 2 years, suspending a nurse for months who was willing to work night shifts and had 30 years experience. I mean, you'd think the NHS had better things to be doing than that, wouldn't you?
You would, Helen Joyce. Thank you for your time. You're Director of Advocacy at Sex Matters, a human rights charity. You might take calls on that, but it is very busy about this Afghan rapist story. Mick in South Devon, if Afghanistan refused to take them back, simply refuse all UK visas for Afghanistan. Sadly, Mick, we won't even start the process because it's been determined that this is a hostile country. Jennifer says this is a horrible story to have this young girl raped by these two people. Nothing could be more mortifying for a young girl. With all the questions being asked as why we can't send these asylum seekers back, I presume to understand why we, the UK, have an agreement with Afghanistan. It's not an agreement, Jennifer and Harrow. It's not an agreement, really. It's just that we deem it unsafe, so we will not deport there. Ajmal is in Enfield. What can you tell me, Ajmal? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. I am Ajmal, and I'm an Afghan national living in the United Kingdom.
Right.
Came here as a child and lived here, studied here, served the British Armed Forces as an translator.
Oh, right. Thank you for the work you did.
Right now, I'm literally doing my master's in law.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm deeply sorry on behalf of all the Afghans living in the United Kingdom.
You don't have to apologize. It's not your
fault.
Honestly,
this is my heart is weeping right now. I have a daughter.
Yeah. What? Are you still there, Ajmal? Hello, Ajmal. Oh, what a shame. Has he gone? Yes, he has. Ajmal, just lastly, what if you had the opportunity, what would you say to these two teenage Afghans?
Can you hear me, Nick?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what would you say to these two rapists if you saw them, Ajmal?
I wouldn't say anything. I'll just bash their heads.
Okay.
Honestly.
All right, OK, I can understand the anger, not least as you're a father of a daughter, as, of course, this 15-year-old also has suffered her ordeal. Ajmal, it's a bit of a dodgy line. Thank you. Please, you don't have to apologise. So I appreciate that you felt you wanted to, and it clearly has upset you, but it's not necessary for you as a law-abiding, someone who actually helped the armed forces, law-abiding citizen, making a life here. You don't have to apologise, but thank you for getting through. Coming up after the news, changes in employment and employment rights. Former Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner said in the Commons debate yesterday...
It has been a battle to pass this bill, but progress is always a struggle that we fought for. Its passage will be a historic achievement for this Labour government.
And as part of it, workers will be entitled to a week off to mourn the death of a distant cousin who you haven't seen for years. You'll get a week off. Who would be an employer? Plus, it's one of the biggest deals in the industry. Warner Brothers Discovery, owner of HBO, known for shows like Sex and the City, and the city is buzzing over whether it's going to be Netflix or Paramount in that big billion-dollar deal. More after this. 7:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, and LBC News Time, Thomas Watts.
The head of a review of NHS maternity care in England has warned the situation is much worse than she anticipated. Baroness Amos's interim findings include concerns about unacceptable care and poor cleanliness. Ukraine is set to share a revised peace plan with the White House. It follows Volodymyr Zelensky's talks in London with Keir Starmer and the leaders of France and Germany. Heavy rain and strong winds are expected to cause disruption across Scotland, Wales and southwest England today. The Met Office has issued several danger to life weather warnings for Storm Bram. Already wet and windy for most parts of the UK this morning, a high of 15 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
Trump White House warns that Europe is facing civilizational erasure. What on earth is he on about?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Everything has led to this moment. The Porsche Cayenne Black Edition. 2 decades of evolution have created the refined SUV with true Porsche performance. With enhanced personalization, athletic detailing, and high-gloss black finish, the Black Edition isn't just driven, it's felt. This is the moment where style meets precision. The brand new Porsche Cayenne Black Edition. 20 years in the making. To book your test drive, search Porsche Guildford or visit Porsche.co.uk. Porsche, there is no substitute.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is, and you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavoured fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up on 7:34, and the reaction continues, comes in on these two Afghan rapists. We'll come back to you, John. You'll be the caller. But into the world of business, Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB and joins me now. And there's a heck of a deal going on, isn't there, as regards the future of Warner Brothers, with Paramount, makers of The Godfather, putting an offer they hope they can't refuse. What's the latest details, Kathleen? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, so this is Paramount's sixth bid. It was a hostile offer. So Netflix, it looked like it had all been wrapped up on Friday night, with Netflix's bid being accepted by the Warner Brothers board. But they've gone very hostile. They've taken their offer directly to the shareholders of Paramount. There's a bit of a political element to this, because David Ellison, he's the owner of Paramount. He's the son of Larry, who is the founder of Oracle. And he's also a very big Trump ally. So late on Sunday night, Trump said that he didn't know about Netflix because it would be too big, it could have monopoly risks, etc. And then, of course, the next day we get this hostile offer from Paramount. And apparently the Ellisons have actually given recent assurances to President Trump that if they bought Warner Brothers, they would also buy the TV networks, which includes CNN. That's something that Netflix have said they wouldn't do. They want Warner Brothers to get rid of that themselves. But of course, CNN is the nemesis of President Trump. He clashes with them regularly. And he's publicly called for change there and change to programming schedules. So it seems like they may have offered him that. But they have offered a better deal. So, you know, a better deal to shareholders. They're offering more money to shareholders. It's a smaller company. So Paramount is a much smaller company, so it could be easier to pass by regulators. And actually, Netflix is so big that even if it didn't buy Warner Brothers, it would still be the world's biggest streamer.
We'll watch and we'll wait. But sadly, there's a wait for the Bank of England warning staff there could be job cuts. What's behind that, Kathleen?
Yes. So they've got a voluntary severance program running until the end of January at the moment, because they need to cut staff to free up resources to upgrade their forecasting models. So Andrew Bailey, he told staff at the bank that they need to cut operating costs by 8% in each department. Yes. So not nice, especially at this time of year, not nice at any time of the year. But they need to invest heavily in IT. So they've let their investments slip for sure. And it's obviously really important that our central banks do have the best forecasting models, because that's what they use, obviously, to set interest rates. And there have been some gaps. Ben Bernanke, the former head of the Federal Reserve in the US, did a review of everything at the Bank of England and said that there were big gaps in their models. So these things don't come cheap. But I think, you know, it's not just the Bank of England. It's like a lot of other organizations around the country. They're cutting staff because technology, maybe even AI, can do the job. And also the cost of employment is so high, you know, certainly in the past year. And when it comes to investment, staff will be sacrificed for that.
We mentioned President Trump in our conversation about Paramount and Netflix. He also features in this story. He's made a key decision about small cars, if I'm pronouncing that right. What's that about?
Yes, tiny cars. So these are the key trucks and the key cars that they're really ubiquitous in Japan. They are the tiniest little cars. They're 11 foot long, 5 foot wide, and 6.5 foot tall. Now, for some bizarre reason, he came out yesterday and he seems to have a massive soft spot for these cars. He's called them very cute, and he said that they can be built in America and that he wants them to be built in America, and he called them amazing. May have been a little bit too eager, because even though these cars are very fuel efficient,
they're boxes.
Cost between
my colleague has just put pictures up. I mean, it's just a box on wheels. Have you seen a photograph? You might not have seen that, actually, Kathleen.
Yes, I've seen them. I've seen them in real life. They are absolutely. They look like fake cars, like a giant toy.
Yeah.
They cost between $9,000 and $13,000. But
$9 for it. Anyway, go on.
They don't actually meet US safety standards. In the US, you need to have, a minimum front end width. You've got to have a distance across a seat cushion. And then I think most crucially, a sturdiness of a crumple zone in a crash.
Well, so that
they wouldn't meet
those.
It doesn't seem like it does. It seems rare that something would get a safety exemption in the US, which is a really litigious country anyway.
Yeah.
How would you insure these things?
Isn't it funny how times, you're far younger than I, but when I used to go to America as a teenager, the joy was seeing how huge their cars were. And they were, and anybody who's ever seen a show called Columbo, just watch for the villain. He always has the biggest car possibly, which is the size of a small house. How times have changed. Interesting. We'll watch. Before I let you go, XTB is campaigning to help younger savers. What's that about, Kathleen?
Yes, so we are calling on the Chancellor to lower the ISA age limit to 16 from 18, because we think this aligns with other legal responsibilities.
Just tell everyone what an ISA is, of course. Remind the listeners what an ISA is.
The ISA, so that's the tax-efficient saving vehicle where you get £20,000 a year. So right now you've got to be 18 to open one. We would like that limit lowered to 16. So this is to support young earners. Just yesterday, the Prime Minister said he wants apprenticeships to be seen in the same way as going to university, and for some, that will mean leaving school at 16 and earning their own money. So they should have the same rights as an adult when it comes to investing. Also, we just heard in the budget, Nick, that the Chancellor would like to boost education and create a culture of investing. And if you start young, that culture will come about. You know, ISAs are really safe. They're a low risk way to invest and to grow your money. So this initiative would really help people take responsibility of their own money and turn young people away from riskier investments, which risks their money, and potentially they could lose their money.
Kathleen, thanks for all your input on the stories and that note about your campaign at XTB. Kathleen Brooks, financial analyst and research director at the XTB trading platform. The time is 7:40. John, to you in a moment. Just a couple, so much social media coming in. Kyle in Liverpool says, as a gay person myself, this story has repulsed me and turned my stomach. Keep reporting and doing what you're doing on stories such as these rapists. These men should be thinking of making a life possibly in a different country. Same subject, this comes from Sam. They came here for our human rights and spat in the face of our most basic laws. Why are we protecting their human rights? Because we term Afghanistan to be an unsafe country. That's why. John's in Enfield. John, what do you want to say to this story? Good morning.
Oh, hello, Nick. Yeah, yes, I don't know if you know, but Germany has actually deported, I'm looking at the figures there, 109 Afghans back to Afghanistan. They've just, not the general asylum seekers, but convicted criminals.
Yeah.
And they are talking to the Taliban, but so far, 2025, they've deported 81 convicted criminals back to Afghanistan. And also, if you look at Pakistan, literally, it's by the millions that they're taking them, shipping them out. I think in 2025, over 300,000 alone, right? Now, a couple of things. With this, you know, the family of the rapist, yeah?
Yes.
Why don't they sue the government for knowingly importing criminality?
Do you mean the family of the victim?
Why don't they sue the government for knowingly importing criminality into this country?
Well, many reasons for that. They didn't knowingly import them. They had, as far as the courts in the United Kingdom know, they had no previous convictions. They are relatively young. One was not even 17. The crime committed the day before he became 17. So you'd never get the case to stand up. Now, whether you could take some kind of action about how lax the borders are, that is a separate, perhaps, conversation. But, John, thank you. That's a really important point about Germany. And I actually will make a point of looking at that at some point after the show. 7:42. Now, I mentioned when we went through the newspapers this morning that three have the story of the Ukraine peace talks on their front page with a different interpretation. For the Daily Telegraph, Trump's peace deal on brink of collapse. For the Guardian, a picture of Sir Keir Starmer shaking hands with Volodymyr Zelensky, Friedrich Merz and Emmanuel Macron. A critical moment is how they term it. And then the Times tells us there's a deal to unlock £100 billion for Ukraine within days. Let's turn to Dominic Nichols, who's Associate Editor of Defence at The Telegraph and hosts the Ukraine, the latest podcast, joins me now. OK, which line would you want to start with, Dominic? What's come out of yesterday? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yesterday, not an awful lot, although Friedrich Merz, Germany's Chancellor, did tweet, Ukraine's fate is Europe's fate and no one should be under any illusion, our resolve will not falter. So, you know, pretty tough words, but, you know, as I always say, I think you do as well, Nick, you know, words are one thing, actions another. Yeah. But, I mean, they had to turn up, they had to do the grip and grin for the cameras. I'm hoping that a lot of stuff happened behind closed doors, because not an awful lot was displayed publicly, although what was displayed publicly was the sort of minimum viable product, if you like. Europe had to turn up yesterday and show strong support for Zelensky. Whether or not it pushes it along at all, nobody knows, but actually just being there is the most important thing right now to try and get over this latest sort of chaos from Donald Trump.
Dominic, you mentioned Donald Trump. The front page of your paper, your colleagues Joe Barnes and Iona Cleave suggest the deal is on the brink of collapse. Is it as gloomy as that, Dominic?
Well, yes and no, and I know it's a bit of a politician's answer, which is always unwelcome, so sorry about that, but I mean, there's no deal to collapse. It was just an airy-fairy idea floated by a sort of, you know, Steve Witkoff and the Russians dreamt this thing up. I don't think, I mean, Trump said yesterday or Sunday that Zelensky hasn't read the plan. I'm pretty sure you haven't either, Donald. And yeah, it was a nothing plan. It was just so Russia-leaning. No wonder Russia came out fully supporting it. So it was never going to wash. You know, Ukraine's not going to give up the territory that Russia hasn't taken in 4 years or / 11 years of war. So it was never going to wash with the Ukrainians or the Europeans. So there was no plan to collapse. But I think this current round of diplomacy is about to collapse.
Lastly, he's nothing if not busy, President Zelensky. He met the three here in the United Kingdom. Then I understand he was off to Brussels, and then he was on to Italy. Is he concerned he has to keep shoring up support? Is it starting to drift away? Is it stronger than ever? How would you categorise it, Dominic?
He does have to keep shoring up support. It'll be stronger than ever is a relative point, because it's been pretty low up to now, I would say. I think Zelensky's in a real tricky spot. I mean, at what point does he become part of the problem? Donald Trump hates him after the stuff he didn't come up with over Hunter Biden. So is he the right guy for the job now? Is his part in this play done? Does he turn to the right and move off the stage and someone else comes in to try and get it over the line?
Grateful for your time. The podcast is Ukraine, the Latest, hosted by Dominic Nichols, Associate Editor of Defence at the Title. Coming up after the news, a big change in how the railways are run. Will it be Great British Railways or will it be Thomas the Tanked Engine? We'll ask the Transport Secretary for more details on that. And also be aware, be very aware, I hope you've had your flu jab. Virologist Dr. Sarah Pitt with the University of Brighton.
The peak flu season is normally the last week of December and the first week of January. The cases are kind of tipping up now, so it's possible that it'll still peak over Christmas, but at a higher than normal levels, or it'll peak slightly earlier.
Children being told not to sing their hymns in assemblies because they don't want to spread the germs, and to wear face masks. Where have you heard that before? We'll look at that in more detail in the next hour. 7:45 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
The head of a review of NHS maternity care has warned the situation is much worse than she expected. Ukraine is set to share a revised peace plan with the US, and heavy rain and strong winds are expected to cause disruption across Scotland, Wales and southwest England as Storm Bram moves in. A high today of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The roads are very wet, lots of surface spray around, reducing visibility, so do take extra care. And it's very slow on the M40 southbound, heading towards Junction 3 at Loudwater. It's after an accident, two lanes stay closed. Also, lengthy delays onto the QE2 bridge on the M25 clockwise after a car broke down. And delays of about 2 miles on the M2 westbound up to Junction 6 at Faversham. And that's after an accident. Putney Hill in Putney is closed southbound after an accident, and lengthy delays in Highgate on the A1 Archway Road both ways, and that's after an accident. Chiltern Railways are now going to and from Marylebone, but there are delays and no Waterloo and City Line.
This is LBC.
For everyone who made your year, there's a moon pig, like your mum, who wraps all the presents way past midnight, your hairdresser, who squeezed you in before the Christmas due, or your neighbour who takes in all your Christmas deliveries. So add stickers, photos and videos. All these special touches at no extra cost in the UK's most personalised card. Because this Christmas, everyone deserves a
moonpig.com.
Delivery charges apply. To verify, see moonpig.com/personalised.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Unwrap daily surprises this December with the Lidl Plus Advent Calendar. Every day until Christmas, you could get exclusive offers like money-off coupons and even the chance to win a year's free shopping. Check the Lidl Plus app every day to open 24 unmissable offers. Lidl, more to value.
18+ GB only, while stocks last. Minimum spend required. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no.
Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Take the world's best snooker players. One of the most unpredictable seasons. At the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace. It can only be the 2026 Johnston's Paint Masters. Could it be Sean Murphy? Judd Trump? Neil Robertson? Or world champion Zhao Xingtong? Who takes the trophy? One thing's certain. Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters. Sofas live. Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone. Watch in style from VIP sofas. Book now. WST.TV/tickets.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 606 973.
7:49. Back to our conversation about that horrific case up in Warwickshire, with a 15-year-old girl being forced to perform sex acts for those two Afghan nationals in a moment. It certainly provoked a lot of comment. But to other matters, and we understand that today the Department of Transport will allow us to get our first look at the future of Britain's railways. And here with more details, Labour MP and Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. When my listeners, when your voters go and have a look at it, what will they see? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks ever so much for having me on today. Cool. Yeah, so today we are launching the new brand for Great British Railways. This is going to be the logo and the designs that people will see rolled out at stations and trains from next year. So it's a beautiful Union Jack inspired design with some of the old British Rail heritage included in it as well, which is that sort of double arrow that people are very familiar with.
The old intercity one with the two lines.
Completely right.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So
you have to be of a certain age to remember that, Heidi.
Yeah.
Do go on.
We've tried to bring that into the 21st century. We've done all of this work in-house to make sure that we're providing the taxpayer with value for money. But I do think that it's a nice modern design with that nod to the railway heritage as well. And people are also seeing today, for the first time, a sneak preview of the new app that people will be able to use as part of Great British Railways. We're consolidating all of the ticketing functions of the 14 different train operating companies into one app where people will be able to get information on tickets, fares, timetables, things like, you know, are the lifts working at a particular station as well, in case you have got access difficulties. And I think that's really bringing the railways into the 21st century, because that's the way other people engage with other businesses and other aspects of their life, and having all of that information in the palm of your hand can only be a good thing.
Secretary of State, is it like it used to be called, as you rightly say, British Rail or BR? Is it now Great British Railways and GBR, or how is it to be known?
It will be Great British Railways, and it will be shortened to GBR.
Right, okay. Is there a website where people can see the colours and see the trains and see the logos and the branding, or is that not up yet?
It should be up. I think on our DFT website, gov.uk, there will be some information there. It will be appearing on websites and at stations, on the digital display screens across the country from next year. At London Bridge today, we've got a one-day exhibition, and for the rest of the week, if you're in Manchester Piccadilly, Glasgow Central, Leeds City, Birmingham New Street or London Bridge, you can see the designs there.
Well, that's not going to help the good folk of Swindon, is it? How are they going to get to any of those, Heidi Alexander?
Well, as I say,
in the West Country.
Well, as I say, it's going to be rolled out over time. And if I came onto your programme, Nick, and said that we were spending hundreds of millions of pounds on a paint job on every single train, I know you would send me away with a flea in my ear.
As if I would.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to be sensible about this. When trains are being repainted as part of their normal maintenance cycle, as we get new rolling stock onto the network, that will carry the new branding. But it is exciting, and it's the first time in 30 years that we are going to be freezing fares next year, as the Chancellor announced in the budget. And it's also 30 years since anyone has taken a really long, hard look at the legislation that governs the railways. And this afternoon in the House of Commons, we got the second reading of the Railways Bill, which gives me the power to set up Great British Railways. That's going to be an integrated organisation that manages the trains and the tracks. At the moment, we've got 17 disparate organisations involved in running the railways. That makes it inefficient. It makes it wasteful. We're going to sweep that away, and we're going to build a railway that is focused on passengers and not profit, and a railway that people can rely on and be proud of, because I know that train turning up on time is the thing that's most important to people. They're fed up of cancellations. They were fed up under the Conservative government of those 2 years of rolling strikes that we saw on the railways. We've reset relations with the trade unions on the railways in the last year, and so we need to make progress and give the country the railway service that it needs and deserves.
And just to clarify, the GBR, that will own trains, tracks, stations, the whole shooting match, is that correct?
So the rolling stock will still be privately owned, but the train, the operations will be conducted by the public sector. And the track and the signalling and all of the infrastructure that Network Rail, which is currently a public sector body, owns, that will all be in the same organisation. So the people who are employed, the drivers who are driving the trains, the people who work on the stations, the management of what were the private train operating companies, all of those people will become employees of the public sector, and they will be part of Great British Railways. Okay. We've already taken three train operating companies into public ownership this year, Southwestern, C2C and Greater Anglia, and another four will be following next year. We save £150 million in the fees that we were previously paying out to the private train operating companies, and we're determined to make sure that we're providing a really good value for money service as well as that reliable service that people expect.
Okay, just turning to The Guardian, they tell us, by the way, that there is a Hornby model, if people want to see the colours of the train, so they could always go to the Hornby website and have a look at it there.
Indeed.
You mentioned that seven of England's former private train operators are back in public hands. When do you hope to have everything back in public hands? Have you set yourself a deadline, Secretary of State?
Yeah, so all seven, there's another four that will be happening next year. So the first one, West Midlands Trains, in February, followed by GTR, which is part of the Thames Link and Southern and Great Northern franchise. Then it will be Chiltern, then it will be Great Western Railways, and then there will be the final three in 2027. We're taking the legislation through Parliament now, which means that we will set up Great British Railways itself and bring together all of these different organisations once that legislation has passed in 2027. It is a really complex rewiring of the system, because we're giving new powers to Great British Railways to take decisions about timetables and track access. It took years for us to get this new timetable in place on the East Coast Main Line that will be coming in a phased way starting next week. It was because everyone was trying to reach consensus. Nobody could actually take a decision on it. And it's ridiculous, actually, that it came up to the rail minister finally to take a decision on it. We also last week saw a situation where the Office for Rail and Road, which is the regulator of the railways, basically said that there was going to be a 7 a.m. service that ran from Manchester to London on Avanti West Coast, but they weren't going to allow passengers on it. I mean, how nuts is that? We have, thankfully, been able to get the regulator to reverse that decision. And I think the public would see sense in that. But we need to avoid these sorts of things happening in future. And that is why it's so important that Great British Railways will take decisions about track access and will also take decisions about timetables. And the person that has control of the timetable in railways is the person that's running the railway.
We've got about a minute or so left together. You mentioned that the train fare freeze, but you'll be aware Transport for London's financial settlement with the Department of Transport means tube commuters will not benefit from a national fare freeze. It's possible that we could be looking at, if inflation is at 4.3%, Londoners could be seeing fares rise by more than 5%. Secretary of State, how is that justifiable?
So I think the Mayor of London has yet to confirm what his fares increase will actually be. Decisions about tube fares and bus fares in London are the devolved responsibility of the Mayor of London. We did have a discussion with him, though, when we were going through the spending
review.
Are you
in support of this, then?
So look, when we discussed the spending review and we gave London £2.2 billion of capital investment, which is actually going to enable investment in things like new Bakerloo line trains, new DLR trains. We're also progressing the extension of the DLR to Thamesmead. We agreed with the mayor that the assumption was that that £2.2 billion of investment, which is the largest single capital settlement in the last decade for Transport for London, that we would be assuming an RPI plus one fares increase, so that London is also making a contribution to that new investment.
So you are in favour of London's paying possibly 5% increase in their tube fares.
So the mayor and I
trying to make it more affordable.
The mayor and I had a grown-up conversation about the £2 billion worth of investment in the capital's transport infrastructure. Of course, people that use the National Rail network in London, you know, if you're coming from Hither Green, where I live in southeast London, into Charing Cross on a sort of point-to-point season ticket, then those individuals would be benefiting as well. So there's a lot of Londoners that do actually, you know, just rely upon the National Rail network, and the fares freeze will apply to them. And of course, a lot of your listeners as well, if you're living just outside of London, Nick, and you're living in Woking, if you had seen an RPI plus one fares increase, you would have seen your fares going up by over £150. In Milton Keynes, people are saving State, £300.
The Secretary of State, as the Times points out, the Times newspaper, and you know London well, this means our Oyster card journey from King's Cross to London Bridge will be £3.05. How do you justify that?
So the costs of running the transport system in London are not insignificant.
They're not running a national rail network, but you freeze the national rail fares, right, which is obviously very expensive to run that, but you don't seek to freeze TfL.
So the decisions about fares in London and other cities where there is devolved decision making.
£2.2 billion quid, best settlement in 10 years, and they just put the prices up. Why do you allow that?
Well, we agreed with the mayor when we were discussing the spending review that we would make available over £2 billion of capital investment over the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. And we agreed that it would be right in that context for Londoners to also make a contribution towards that. Right. Because we do need to invest in new Bakerloo line trains, new DLR trains. There's investment that needs to happen on things like the road network as well.
All right, Heidi, I must leave it. I'm so sorry. Let's talk. Thank you for your time. Great British Railways unveiling the livery for the renationalised trains. You heard the stations where you can catch up with it. Should you be so minded, you can also go to the Hornby website. Heidi Alexander, Transport Secretary. I'm sorry, but I have to go because we're already late to news. Thanks for your input on that. 1 minute after eight, LBC headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, an interim report has warned of unacceptable care leading to tragic consequences in England's maternity unit. Baroness Amos, who is leading the National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation, says the situation is much worse than she anticipated. She's expected to publish her full findings and recommendations next year. Dr. Kim Thomas from the Birth Trauma Association says bad experiences are common.
Things like notes not being recorded accurately, hospitals denying what had happened. You know, there's a lot of medical gaslighting that goes on. It's an absolutely shocking state of affairs, and I think it's probably getting worse as well.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, who ordered the investigation, says the failures cannot be ignored. Ukraine is due to share an updated peace plan with the US after talks with European leaders in London. Volodymyr Zelensky says some obvious anti-Ukrainian points have been removed from the proposals. He's again ruled out giving up territory to Russia. Weather warnings for Storm Bram have been extended by the Met Office. Amber alerts, warning of a danger to life, now cover northwest Scotland, north Northern Ireland, South Wales and Dartmoor. Gusts of up to 90 miles per hour are expected in some places. An investigation by LBC has found cyclists routinely ignoring red lights at a busy London junction. Fewer than a quarter stopped at the pedestrian crossing at Blackfriars during a survey of the morning rush hour. Running a red light on a bicycle carries a fine of up to £50, but campaigners say riders should face the same tougher penalties as drivers. Gerard Griffith's mother, Hilda, died after being hit by a cyclist 3 years ago.
The laws governing cycling are from 1861, so very archaic, you know, like Victorian laws for horse and carriage riding, and far different to the bikes and e-bikes that we've got these days that can reach speeds of 30 plus miles an hour.
And holders Crystal Palace have drawn sixth-tier Macclesfield in the third round of the FA Cup. There are four all-Premier League ties, including Tottenham against Aston Villa and Manchester United at home to Brighton. Manchester City will host League One Exeter. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.45 after closing down 21 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather wet and windy for most parts of the UK as the storm moves in. The most severe conditions in Western Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 5 minutes after eight on Tuesday, December the 9th. Coming up in this hour, we'll return to the story of the Afghan asylum seekers who turned rapists who we cannot deport. Simply because of the sheer weight of calls of people who want to get involved, but there are other stories we're going to be looking at. Not least is the idea, of course, is the Employment Rights Bill, championed by former Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner, who said during a Commons debate yesterday,
"It has been a battle to pass this bill, but progress is always a struggle that we fought for. Its passage will be a historic achievement for this Labour government."
And it could lead to workers being entitled to a week off to mourn the death of a distant family member. Would you be supportive of that? In other news, the flu that is sweeping through much of the country, particularly, by the way, Wales and the West, where in some instances schools have been closed, assemblies cancelled and children banned from singing. It's also up in the North. Chief Executive of the Mid-Yorkshire Teaching NHS Trust, Brent Kilmurray, told LBC...
Obviously, it's a busy time of year for us. We're preparing for industrial action as well in the next couple of weeks. So clearly, you know, it's definitely worth people thinking about whether they really need to come.
Plus, how NHS maternity failings leave women feeling blamed for the poor care. Maternity campaigner Rebecca Matthews says the Amos review, as in Baroness Amos, appears to lack substance.
It seems as though it is heading the same way that other reviews have gone in the past, leading to some recommendations, but no teeth.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So much reaction to this in the previous hour, and then we got into a lengthy conversation concerning the change to GBR, or Great British Railways, that we thought we'd come back to. Just to start the hour, we will move on, I assure you. This is the story of the two teenage asylum seekers from Afghanistan raping a 15-year-old schoolgirl just months after arriving in the UK on small boats. They were living in taxpayer-funded accommodation in Warwickshire. The victim managed to record the start and aftermath of the genuinely horrific attack on her mobile. Her attackers each admitted a single charge of rape of a child under 16, when they appeared before magistrates in Coventry. Judge Silvia de Bertodano lifted reporting restrictions. They had sought not to give their names, not to their background. The elder of the two, Jan Jahanzeb, was jailed for 10 years, and his accomplice, Isra Nayazal, was handed a term of 9 years and 10 months. If you weren't listening at the first hour of the show, this was a report fired by LBC's reporter in the region, Luke Shanahan.
17-year-olds Jan Johanzeb and Israr Mirzal pleaded guilty in October to the rape of a 15-year-old girl in a park in Leamington Spa on the 10th of May. She'd been separated from her friends in Newbold Common, a country park just outside the town, when Johanzeb dragged her off into the bushes as she shouted again and again, begging him to let go. She was able to record some video on her phone of the moment she was abducted, and in it you can hear Johanzeb telling his fellow defendant Mirzal in Pashto to follow as he leads her to a more secluded part of the park, shushing her cries for help, and then you see him put a hand over her mouth to silence those cries. The prosecution say the footage is highly distressing, and what followed was horrific. The young girl eventually escaped, and a member of the public came to help her, advising her to call the police and then waiting with her until she was safe. In a victim impact statement, the girl, who can't be identified for legal reasons, said, "The day I was raped changed me as a person. Now every time I go out, I don't feel safe." We can identify the two defendants after multiple applications to the judge to lift their anonymity, despite them both being younger than 18. The judge said reporting restrictions in this case could lead to speculation, which might see innocent people targeted. The judge also told the pair they had betrayed the interests of genuine refugees. Both defendants came to the UK as unaccompanied child asylum seekers and were staying in taxpayer-funded accommodation in Warwickshire at the time of the attack. Mirzal arrived here in November last year, having fled the Taliban. He's supposedly still seeking asylum in this country, actually, intending to make a life here after his release, following his 9-year and 10-month sentence, which is to be served in youth detention and then prison when he comes of age. He pleaded guilty a day before his 17th birthday. That's the cut-off point for automatic deportation for foreign criminals, although the judge did invite the government to recommend deportation in his case. Johanzeb arrived here in January when, during a third attempt to cross the channel by small boat, he was picked up by the Coast Guard. His birthday was set as the 1st of January after age assessments were made upon his arrival here, so he missed the boat, as it were, on avoiding automatic deportation. He was given a 10-year and 8-month sentence, and the court heard yesterday he's already been served with deportation papers, Nick.
Luke Shanahan reporting now. Not surprisingly, you wanted to have your say on this, and this is what you told me in the previous hour, starting with Antonio in Knightsbridge.
To me, it seems quite simple. The anonymity, you know, they left their country because they were fearing for their lives. That girl now fears for her life. So that when that happens, they should be their anonymity should be removed. Why can't they send them back if they've committed a crime? If they've come here in fear for their lives, and it's a new country, and they come straight in and they abuse it, they're gone. When you commit crimes in other places that you're supposed to be living to save you, you lose all your rights.
Robert in St. Neots.
I can't see why it is, if they're not British nationals, they're not just deported. I understand the fact that we're deporting them to effectively what's a war zone. Don't get me wrong, I think this government's a waste of space. But I think it's previous governments before that and whatever's yep. gone on before that as well. So this isn't just a new thing, is it? This has gone on for years now, the Conservative government, the Blair government, everyone.
John's in Enfield.
Germany has actually deported, I'm looking at the figures there, 109 Afghans back to Afghanistan. Not the general asylum seekers, but convicted criminals.
Yeah.
And they are talking to the Taliban. You know the family, why don't they sue the government for knowingly importing criminality into this country?
Well, you'd never get that because they didn't knowingly... No. Let's get to more of your reactions now, 11 after 8. Guy in Cleethorpes. Guy, your reaction to this. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Tragic, obviously. I was just listening to the gent that he had on. I've got two big concerns.
Mm.
The gent you had on earlier on talking about coming out of the EHCR mm-hmm. or ECHR isn't necessarily a solution unless you've got a returns agreement. And whilst we're talking about criminals, we're also talking about, you know, the overall migration challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a deep concern that politicians make the big statements because they don't have to deal with it until they deal with it. And then when they deal with it, they find it doesn't work. It's a bit like the Rwanda plan.
Mm-hmm.
And Farage started with ECHR, coming out of that is the solution. And now the Conservatives...
It's not, by the way.
Well,
by your own, you know, your accurate summation and reminding us all of the returns agreement, it wouldn't work in the case of these two Afghan rapists.
Well, we've got an issue then, haven't we?
We have. A big one.
So for me, we need to think of something that's, I don't know, even if we have to keep them on this, on UK soil, then we've set something up in the Falklands to make it, you know, something that people don't want to come to England for.
Well, why should the good folk of the Falklands have two Afghan rapists visiting?
Well, I know.
That's not really fair either, is it, when you think of it?
And the second point...
Yes, sir. You're
quite correct. The second point is, we only know about this because one judge chose to allow this information to be public. And I think that also is a concern for me, because I'm now questioning how many others there are.
And we will never know, by the very nature of it, we'll never know how many cases news organisations have appealed and said, we think our readers, our listeners, our viewers have the right to know, and it's been decided now. So, again, credit to the judge who made that decision. Well said. Guy, thank you. Ashley in Coventry, not a million miles from where the story took place. Morning, Ashley. Your view?
Hi, Nick. Yeah, the last point was cock on, really. You know, how many other cases have happened and it's not been divulged what the nationality of us is?
All I can say is all credit to Judge Silvia de Bertodano, who did take the decision in this case. I can't answer, Ashley, as I'm sure you understand. I just don't know, mate.
Exactly, yeah. You know, my sister lives in Leamington. I'm just up the road.
Yep.
You know, I've got young children at home. They're going to be growing up in this sort of environment, and things are changing.
When this story broke, how much nervousness was there, and the details became known, it broke in May, how much nervousness was there in Leamington Spa?
There was a bit of upset, you know, obviously, until they're proven guilty.
Yeah.
Obviously, people don't know, did it happen, you know, which side of the fence are they going to be on, but thankfully they know the truth now, what's happened. Something similar happened in Leamington, where a 12-year-old girl was raped, and that's been proven guilty at Warwick Crown Court.
A 12-year-old?
Yeah.
Good God, it just gets worse and worse. Ashley, best wishes to your family, and I understand your concerns. Steve says, I can't call in, but I was a serving cop who dealt with an overstayer. I stopped in the street in London. He was arrested and said he'd only been in the country for 24 hours and on a truck for 15 days. He was released after 2 hours. There's not enough staff to deal with it, and told to attend an immigration office in Croydon. He raped a woman 2 days later. That's what's wrong with the nonsense of it all. We'll return to this story. Also, coming up after the news, this new employment rights bill. Imagine being a boss and one of your workers says, there's been a death in the family. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Who is it? It's a distant cousin who I didn't actually never meet, but I will have a week off. You, as the boss, will not be able to stop it. How can that be right? It's 8:15, LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
The head of a review of NHS maternity care has warned the situation is much worse than she anticipated. Ukraine is set to share a revised peace plan with the White House, and weather warnings for Storm Bram have been extended by the Met Office. It's wet and windy for most parts of the UK this morning, with the most severe conditions in western Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webbs. The roads are still very wet after all the heavy rain, and there are lengthy delays on the M40 southbound. Now, it was very slow to Junction 3 at Loudwater because of an accident, but now there's been an accident as well at Junction 4 at High Wycombe, so there are huge delays. The M3 is slow for about 4 miles going southbound to Junction 4 at Camberley, and that's after an accident as well. But in Putney Hill is closed southbound because of an accident, and also in Highgate there are lengthy delays on the A1 Archway Road both ways, also after an accident. On the Underground, there's no Waterloo and City Line running at all, and the Metropolitan Line can't run between Moor Park and Watford, and there are severe delays on the Mildmay Line and on the Bakerloo Line.
This is LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £125 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody is watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties.
Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Back the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £125 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody is watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8, coming to you, Lynn, as the next caller on this conversation about the two Afghan rapists who we can't deport. Dawn in Beckham, would it be beyond the bounds of possibility to make a ruling all migrants understand when they come to the UK, if they break any of our laws, they are returned to the country from which they came? Can't do it currently because, as Guy reminded us, it's the returns agreement, Dawn, though they can't go back to what's deemed to be an unsafe country. Richard in Dartford asks, are you aware that, as far as I can see, the BBC has no mention of this story on its website? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Of course it doesn't. It doesn't fit with their liberal agenda where we should be welcome. Everybody must arrive here. Everyone's marvellous. And anyone who voices a single complaint is some kind of racist because they say that we don't particularly want to import Afghan rapists or Ethiopian sex offenders. You won't see that on the BBC. Come on, you know that, Richard. Lynn's in Sidcup. Lynn, your reaction. Good morning.
Nick, hi. I'll be quick because I'm on my way to work.
Okay.
But I am absolutely fuming. Mm. Now, if this was a politician's 15-year-old daughter,
oh boy,
I am sure things would change very, very quickly. Now, it's out of sight and out of mind. It's not their 15-year-old daughter.
No.
It's outrageous, and I truly believe if it was, things would change very quickly.
We wouldn't wish it on anybody. But
no.
Why do you suppose, and yours is a very, it's a very sad, but it's a very fair point. Why do you suppose there is such inertia here, Lynn?
I just think it's out of sight, out of mind. It's not my daughter. I'm just fuming, Nick, to be honest.
Imagine being the parents, grandparents of that 15-year-old kid in Leamington Spa, whose life will never be the same again, Lynn.
Nick, and I know I shouldn't threat, but they would not have got to prison, I'll tell you now. But anyway.
All right. Careful what you say, but I understand if it was your daughter how you would feel. We'll return to that story. Lynn, safe driving on your way to work. We'll talk again soon. Meshi, you will be the next call on this. But to other matters, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, this is actually, part of this finds itself on the front page of one of your newspapers this morning, the Daily Telegraph, with an aspect of this employment rights bill, workers' rights bill, championed, of course, by the former Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, speaking yesterday in a debate in the House of Commons.
It has been a battle to pass this bill, but progress is always a struggle that we fought for. Its passage will be a historic achievement for this Labour government.
Yeah.
It will benefit working people now and into the future. Now is not the time to blink or buckle. Let's not waste a minute more. It's time to deliver.
And, of course, there's been much concern expressed by bosses about the rights that will be afforded to workers. And it's fair to say that, in part, it has been diluted. But one aspect that's making headlines this morning is the entitlement to time off if there's a death of a distant family member. The workers' rights bills could grant workers a week's leave following the death-in-law of cousins, uncles and even nieces that, it says here, that possibly they didn't even meet. The expansion of what's called bereavement leave, which is currently only mandatory for the death of a child under 18, is part of this. Legislation stating all workers from day one will be able to claim a week of, it, I must say, unpaid bereavement leave. They will now consult on how exactly the definition should be. Will it include what are called blended families or even close friends? Hi, sorry to trouble you. Yes, I've had a really close friend die. Oh, I am so sorry. That's awful. And I won't be in for a week. could be a boss. Karen Lord Billimoria, founder of Cobra Beer, chair of the International Chamber of Commerce, co-chair of the All Party Parliamentary Group, is an entrepreneur, an independent crossbench peer, and has been and is a boss. Karen, how difficult to be a boss in these days? Morning, sir.
Good morning, Nick. This employment rights bill has all the right intentions of trying to protect employees, but it's a question of getting the balance right between employers and employees. And there's no question about it. Any good, fair employer will always put their employees first. And if in the sad situation where there is a bereavement for an employee, most employers who are caring will of course say, look, the person says, I need to go for a funeral. Mm. I need to just go and spend a little bit of time to care for this relative or a very close friend. Most employers would say, of course you can. But to make it mandatory and saying a whole week and not being clear about which relation is going to be very difficult to be able to implement. And this is the problem, that businesses at the moment are going through a very tough time. Unemployment is going up. Yes. We had very low unemployment, now touching 5%. We've got a million young people between the ages of 16 and 24 who are not working. We need to get people back into work. And particularly small and medium-sized enterprises are really struggling. And if you make it more difficult for them to employ people, to retain people, it just makes it more difficult for businesses to survive in a very, very tough environment. And if you remember, the big issue was this ability for an employee to get rights from day one,
yes,
whereas at the moment it's 2 years. Now, in practical terms, as an employer, one of the best decisions you make as an employer is hiring the right person. One of the worst decisions you make as an employer is hiring the wrong person. And if you've hired the wrong person, if they get rights from day one, then you have great difficulty in asking that person to leave. Whereas now the government, thanks to the House of Lords, and this is where the House of Lords is a check and balance, and checking what the House of Lords, House of Commons does, scrutinizing legislation. I'm very proud that thanks to our work, the government has listened, and in the budget they said it will not be from day one, it will be after 6 months. Now 6 months is not the same as 2 years, but at least 6 months gives you some time. And if the government keeps listening, that's the most important thing, listening to business, because business needs the help and support and can work with government to deliver the growth that the government is desperate to achieve.
Let me ask you, moving from 2 years, Karen, to 6 months, would that get the broad approval of the House of Lords, would you say? Can you live with that?
It is, of course, nowhere near the same as 2 years, but 6 months is a period of time where you get a chance, as opposed to day one. So, yes, it is a compromise, but it's far, far better than day one.
We're talking, as official analysis of the ONS figures yesterday showed, we're losing 1,000 jobs a day. I don't need to tell you how tough it is in the hospitality sector. And yet we have all sorts of initiatives, as championed yesterday by Baroness Smith, to try and get young people into employment, such as hospitality. Can I put this to you? These are rather mixed messages, Lord Billimoria.
I keep saying this. The government's intentions are absolutely right. The problem is you cannot deliver growth by raising taxes. I mean, even business rates. This is something that hits hospitality, hits retail. They've said business rates are going down. Actually, if you do the calculations, according to the British Beer and Pub Association or UK Hospitality, the industry associations, the rates are actually going up for these businesses. So if you're making it more and more difficult for them to survive, that's going to hamper them. And they are struggling at the moment. And then if you make employment rights so difficult that people are scared to take people on, and that's the worst situation. We've always had flexible, fair employment rights overall compared with our competitor countries, neighboring countries like France, that's given us an edge. Mm. And as long as we have that going forward, we can help our business. If we start restricting or making it difficult to employ people or business being scared to employ people, that's the worst situation to have. We must not go anywhere near that, because we need to encourage employment, because that employment will deliver the growth, which will then deliver the jobs, which will deliver the taxes that will pay for the public services.
Karen, probably won't talk to you again. Can I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas? And thanks for all your help. Thanks, sir. Thanks for all your help down the year. Lord Billimoria, founder of Cobra Beer, chair of the International Chamber of Commerce UK, co-chair of the India All Party Parliamentary Group, and, of course, independent crossbench peer. Let's come back. You can, of course, call. Would you want to take away? I say again, it is unpaid. I'll give you that. But obviously, if you lose someone who's a close member, dear God, you lose your wife or your mum or whatever it might be. Hi, so can I trouble you? Yeah, I've just lost my mother. Oh my God, you must go home now. Give us a call when you need to. Just get in touch when you need. Hi, have you got a minute? Yeah, I've just lost a cousin. Oh, right. I actually didn't... I think I only met them when I was four, but I'll be taking a week off. We've got that important presentation. Yeah, but it's the law. I can take a week off, thanks. I've just lost a very close friend. Oh, I am sorry. Oh, dear. Yeah, and I won't see you for a week. Now, you're going to say that I'm heartless, and this is how it should be. Is it right? You'll tell me. Fumi in High Wycombe. The Afghan rapist story can be found on the BBC, but I agree, the powers that be don't care because it's not on their doorstep. By the way, people are working, and people like this could be working in restaurants, high street shops, etc. Something needs to be done. Fumi, thank you for that. Now, who's been hanging on? Meshi in Guildford's been hanging on forever. The story of these Afghan rapists. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I've got it very, very short because I'm at work. Yeah, so right. I've got complete different view. By deporting them rapists, basically you're doing them a favor. They're going to go back to normality, back to normal in their own country. I think they should serve and they should be punished in this country, then be deported. They should 100% be punished here. Before deporting them. By deporting them, you're only doing them a favour, that's all.
But Meshi, so we're looking at sentences of 10 years. I would imagine they'll serve at least half. So we pay for them for 5 years to stay in prison accommodation and then deport them. What? I don't get your logic. So it's not, you're saying we mustn't send them back because that puts Afghan girls at risk, vulnerable, but we'll pay for them for 5 years and then send them back. Just walk me through how you get to that.
My argument is they're not going to serve the sentence if they go back to their country.
No, but we'll have to pay for them for 5 years and then we send them back. Why don't just send them back and say 5 years?
The crime here, Nick, they committed a crime. They should really get punished and serve that and be punished. This is my upset and only.
Okay, let's Meshi. That's how Meshi would do it. Let's see if others agree with it. Thank you for your input on that. Plenty more calls coming in. Joe, I'm going to be talking to you about bereavement leave. I hope you can hold till the other side of the news when I can give you a good run at it, when we're also going to get in the concerns of flu. Classrooms have been shut, assemblies cancelled, and pupils told not to sing in case they spread H3N2. Reminds you of something, doesn't it? Those years ago in COVID, virologist Dr. Sarah Pitt is with the University of Brighton.
The peak flu season is normally the last week of December and the first week of January. The cases are kind of tipping up now, so it's possible that it'll still peak over Christmas, but at a higher than normal levels, or it'll peak slightly earlier.
It's 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news is read by Thomas Watts.
An interim report has found the scale of unacceptable maternity care in England is extremely concerning. Baroness Amos, who is leading the National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation, says the situation is much worse than she anticipated. Ukraine's leader is due to present a revised peace plan to the US. Volodymyr Zelensky has again ruled out surrendering land to Russia after meeting key European leaders in London yesterday. Weather warnings for Storm Bram have been extended by the Met Office. Amber alerts, warning of a danger to life, now cover parts of northwest Scotland, Northern Ireland, South Wales and Dartmoor. Already quite wet and windy across the UK this morning, the most severe conditions in the northwest, a high of 15 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It's about the environment that you've been plopped into having been freshly minted at a university, and it just isn't working. And it's not working because you can't earn the money quick enough to go and start a life for yourself, so you're ditching it. And the YOLO kicks in, and you think, right, well, if someone's going to pay me to sit on my bum for a bit, I'm going to go travelling. Or if I've got the opportunity to go home with mum and dad and not pay any rent, I'm going to take that option for a bit and see where I am in 2 years' time.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods, family owned since 1931.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavoured fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, we'll come to that flu outbreak, or flu lockdown, actually, in some parts of the country in a moment. But Joe's in Romford to talk about this aspect of bereavement leave. How far should it be extended? What level of relative should it be, would you say? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Big fan of the show. I've never felt really the need to call in before, but I just heard, you know, you mentioned the distant relatives. Now, my sister at the weekend, a couple of days ago, gave birth to a stillborn. Oh. She was full term, 9 months. And,
oh, my God. That's horrific.
Little six-pound baby was born. And, you know, she's my little sister. And I, you know, I've taken a few days off.
Of course.
And I've taken it as annual, you know, she's my niece. And I've taken a few days off annual leave. Now, it's very important to me to be able to support my sister, more importantly, to support my mum and dad, who are devastated. You know, I've been ringing round. I've had the priest go round. And, you know, I don't necessarily, my opinion is, I don't necessarily think that it should be mandatory, but I certainly think that employees shouldn't be allowed to restrict. You know, if I tried to take this leave off and I've been told no, that it was, you know, I don't think that would have been right.
No employer should do that, because this is your sister. But the point I'm making, if it had been a distant cousin who you perhaps once met when you were a primary school child, would you think it's right to take a week off for that?
No, absolutely not. I'd heard you say niece, and it kind of made me think. I'd certainly don't. Look, this, that, I mean, she's my niece, and you know, I do think that's required for me to take time off. But I don't think, if you know, if you're talking about in that situation where
it's someone you
met 20 years ago, I agree that no, it shouldn't be extended to that, you know, that far.
Do they know what went wrong?
No, so she gave birth in Queen's Hospital in Romford, which is the same place as my two children were born.
Yes.
My wife actually works in the hospital, and the maternity situation there isn't fantastic. They don't know. They're looking into it at the moment.
Oh, they are.
It's devastatingly sad, Nick. It's probably the saddest thing I've ever had to deal with. I will say that the bereavement midwives have been great, and they've given her time.
And your bosses, or your bosses being good as well, I trust?
Yeah, they've been fantastic.
They are. Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. And it's going to be even more poignant, of course, because of this time of year, and that's so family-oriented. Joe, best wishes to you, to her, to your parents, to everyone. Very, very... It must be mighty tough at the best of times. But with all the celebrations of Christmas and all the tinsel and goodness knows what else and the Christmas trees and the lights, very tough. Joe, thank you for your call. Best wishes to you, my friend. Hope you'll come through it. Let's look at other matters and this flu outbreak that we've mentioned. And I was telling you actually before the news that in some instances it's actually led to school closures, COVID-style lockdowns, children being banned from singing, assemblies cancelled to try and stop the rise of the H3N2 strain, which is known as super flu. As I say, schools closing. Well, one here, St Martin's Secondary School in Caerphilly, which is in Wales, closed after 242 pupils and 12 staff fell sick. Whoa. Dr. Simon Clark is Associate Professor in Cellular Biology at the University of Reading. Gosh, shades of conversations we had a few years ago here, Doctor. What makes this so virulent? Good morning.
Well, because it's an H3 strain,
H3 subtype, not a strain, we don't see those very often. It's usually what we call an H1 subtype. And that means that the population doesn't have a very good level of immunity to it. It has some, but not as good as it would be to H1. And that means that it spreads better. But the virus, the H3 viruses, also seem to transmit a bit better between individuals. So these things all add up to cause a seemingly pretty poor situation this Christmas.
It's also known, I read, as subclade K. Can you explain the thinking behind that?
Well, subclade is the next sort of division of how you classify these things. So we call it influenza A, and then it's H3N2, and then we call it clades and subclades. So it's like sort of cutting things even finer in the classification term. So it doesn't actually tell you anything about the biology of the virus and how it behaves, but it's sort of, you know, what classification you put it in the sort of biological stamp collection.
What level, what sort of percentage of the population do we think have had their flu jabs, Professor?
The total population, it won't be that many. The last figures I saw for people who are aged over 65, and these figures are just over a week old, I think, showed that 70% of them, as reported by GP surgeries, had their vaccine. But people who are clinically vulnerable, so people with diabetes or renal problems or clinical vulnerabilities, their numbers were just over a third, and the same was true of pregnant women. And of course, both categories get the vaccine free from the NHS, so the uptake has not been great. Amongst the rest of the population, it will be very small indeed.
And why? How much of a concern is this, and why do you suppose it is?
People have always been a bit blasé about the flu jab. They have it every year. They think, oh, I got it done last year, I'll be all right. No, you won't. There's a reason why you do it every year. It's because the flu virus changes and you need to update the protection from it. It's important because those people, the people in those categories, are the ones who are most likely to end up in hospital with flu. So giving them the vaccine, making sure they're covered, reduces their chances of ending up in hospital.
Lastly, what's your advice to anyone listening now?
Is to go about your business, but to catch it. What do they say? Catch it, bin it, kill it. If you do, keep your hands clean and consider getting the flu jab. If you're entitled to it on the NHS, definitely get it. If you're not, consider going to your pharmacy anyway.
Dr. Simon Clark, Associate Professor in Cellular Biology at the University of Reading. Good to talk to you. Although it reminds us of conversations you and I had many years ago with COVID. Has this flu hit you, and what makes it? Well, obviously, if you've had it, you can say, I think I had it, and that was the, do you remember the cough I just could not get rid of, and I was I think it's gone now. But if I did have H3N2, it is a strain in every sense of the word. Also, of course, as I said, there are schools closing in Wales, in Congleton, in Cheshire, in Nantwich, and here's where is your name? You haven't given me your, oh dear, you haven't given me your name. I was going to tell you, because there's so much flu around, but do, if you send me an email or text, do please give me your name, because I don't read them out if you're anonymous. Scott has, on the subject of bereavement leave, I lost my brother in October. I'm assistant manager of my company, a well-known builder's merchant, said I wasn't entitled to bereavement leave as he didn't live under my roof. That's awful. We grew up under the same roof. I was completely disgusted. This attitude has made me question the type of company I'm working for. I welcome this new policy. Well, you know what? If the job market wasn't so damn tough, Scott, I would suggest that you thought of working elsewhere, but it's not easy. It's not easy to go and get jobs at all. So I just want to make sure, because this is bereavement, I want to make sure I can read this. No, that's right, you want to keep that person. Okay. Gary actually combines two stories. My brother-in-law passed away from the flu at 30 not long ago. My wife and I had the jab this year. We're both early 40s, and it was worth a £20 fee. I'm sorry you suffered a loss. Okay, let's come back to the conversation we're having. 8:41 is the time, dominated as it is in these first hour and a half, by that story of the Afghan rapist. Shaz is in Streatham. The point you want to make. Good morning.
Good morning,
Hello.
Nick. Yeah, we don't agree on a lot of things, but I wanted to put a view forward, basically.
That's a good start.
I'm a Muslim dad, right. Of Pakistani descent. I've been here four generations.
Yeah.
I have got a 17-year-old, and I'm absolutely livid.
Is that a girl or a boy?
Different angles.
17.
So it's a girl.
Yeah, 17-year-old daughter.
So,
right, yeah.
So I totally understand. I go every day, you know, when she's coming back from school. How is she back? Is she everything okay? Because I'm always worried about what's happening. Because of the society that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a Muslim dad. Mm-hmm. And this crime mustn't be taken that these Muslims are doing this. It's nothing to do with the religion. They are rapists, simple as that.
I'd not even brought their faith into it, actually, but do go ahead.
And going on to the fact what should be dealt with them, mm-hmm. Obviously, I would have dealt with them in a different way if I was in charge or whatever. But the point is, if they are to be deported, the Taliban should be told exactly what their crime was, and you watch, the Taliban will deal with them biblically. They will do, you know, what the UK government can't do in its jurisdiction, you know, and that's how these people should be dealt with.
What would the Taliban's treatment be then?
Well, I don't want to say, because that's the reason why then the government will use that as excuse not to deport them.
No, but Shaz, they cannot be deported. Because of what's called, we don't have a returns agreement with Afghanistan. It's deemed an unsafe country, so they will not go. That is particularly as the father of a teenage girl.
Yeah.
I mean, I know these people are from Leamington Spa at the moment, but
yeah.
You know, a young girl making her way out in life, and we've managed to get ourselves two Afghan rapists who we will never get rid of.
Yeah. Well, this is the worst case scenario that you can't even deport them afterwards. And I think there's this kind of weird like propaganda going about asylum seekers that if you do these kind of crimes, you can stay on in the country.
So in a sense, this is a pass to stay here, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So imagine now, I'm just trying to, I'm thinking loud from devil's advocate
side.
Yeah. So imagine these boys thinking, oh, we're going to be deported back to Taliban. We don't want to go back to that country again. What do we do?
Yes.
Let's do some heinous crime. We get to stay in a jail and stay on in the UK. We'll be protected, whatever. I mean, this is a really weird situation. But in a way, I kind of agree with those kind of reform voters, although I totally don't agree with them and hope they don't come into power.
Yeah.
But I agree with the fact that they have this thing there. Anybody who commits a heinous crime, such as murder, drugs, rape, etc., sexual, etc., they should be deported straight away.
Totally on your page. Good luck raising your daughter. Challenging time, Shaz. Thanks for your call. We're also talking about, I just want to check I can read this. Yes, bereavement. And this idea of mandatory, even for, I would argue, fairly distant losses. Ben in Malvern, I'm so sorry, I lost my mum last week. I haven't even been offered condolences from my boss. My co-workers have been fantastic. I'm not even sure if I'm getting bereavement pay for the week I had off. I think if it's your mother, I need to check. But what sort of company would not pay a bloke if he's lost his mother? Maybe this legislation is necessary, or bits of it anyway. Coming up in the news, we go to the other end of the age spectrum. We go to what should be the happy moment of birth, but sadly it's not. And there's a national maternity and neonatal investigation chaired by Baroness Amos.
Time and time and time again, families feel that the system has failed them. I'm very keen that that does not happen this time.
Moment of pure joy that turns into a nightmare. More on that. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
Interim findings say unacceptable care is leading to tragic consequences in England's maternity unit. Ukraine is due to share an updated peace plan with the US after talks with European leaders in London. And weather warnings for Storm Bram have been extended by the Met Office. It's already wet and windy across much of the UK this morning, with the most severe conditions in northwestern areas. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webbs. The roads remain very wet after all the heavy rain, reducing visibility, so do take extra care. There are severe delays on the M40 southbound to Junction 4 at High Wycombe. This is the second accident this morning on the M40. Also, severe delays on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge. It's slow back to Junction 29 at the A127. It was after a car broke down earlier. In Putney, Putney Hill has reopened southbound, but there are still lengthy delays, and also long delays in Highgate because of an accident on the A1 Archway Road. On the Underground, severe delays on the Bakerloo line and no Metropolitan line between Moor Park and Watford, and Great Western Railway are delayed between Greenford and West Ealing.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
At Morrison's, our Christmas centrepieces are better than half price. Pick up a British beef joint for £6.49 per kilo, a whole leg of lamb for £7.50 per kilo, or British pork loin for £3.75 per kilo. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores and online excludes Morrison's Daily. Max 4 in store 2 online was £8 to £19 per kilo. Ends 24th of December.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Yep. I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £125 million. Pounds.
Go on. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones. Like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food. It's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy while stocks last. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's stay with this idea of compulsory bereavement leave. The government is now going to consult on just how far the boundaries are, whether it would allow distant relatives, distant cousins or even friends. And we've been saying that decent employers obviously would allow that. Let's just take some more of your reactions on that. James, good businesses already give this. In fact, the company I work for gives you paid bereavement leave. James, that's fine. You then add the fact that you know so little about this shows you don't know how to run a good business. Well, I haven't run a business, let alone a good business. I don't think I've ever run a good business. But certainly when I was like an editor or news editor, somebody's relative died, they were just packed off in a taxi straight away. No questions, and just call me when you can. You know, dear God, go and look after your mum or whatever it might. Go and look after your dad who's lost mum, whatever. Same subject. This is from Martin in Ashford in Kent. My wife was terminally ill for the best part of a year. I spent every day at her side. My boss paid me full pay. Oh, how fantastic, throughout this period. No questions asked. This help and support continued after... Well, you've given me the your wife's name. After Hillary died... My employer helped me and still does today. Oh, some 6 years later. Oh, good, you've given me the name. Here we go. River Profiles Limited. River Profiles Limited. I don't know what they do. Really, they care about their employees. As my boss said, without people, what do we have? Nothing. What super employers? I'm going to look them up. Thank you for that. Pat's in Worthing. Pat, what do you want to say on this subject? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Yeah, basically, my daughter died last year, December 16th.
God, I'm so sorry.
Well, she lived in Yorkshire, in Bradford. I'm down in Worthing.
Yes.
My firm, well, I went straight up, to be honest, without telling them, but they gave me one day paid leave.
They gave you one day, and it was your daughter?
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake.
It was a sudden one. I mean, I took two extra days off. She died on a Monday morning. I had to come back to work on a Thursday.
I mean, I don't want to cause you any distress, and it's obviously approaching the anniversary.
Yeah,
do you mind
my
asking, and I'm doing this on behalf of my listeners, really, I mean, what were the circumstances? How much do you want to share? Let's put it like that. What were the circumstances?
It was very, very sudden. I mean, we've got a case going on with the NHS because the lack of care.
Right. So I just need to say now, and you're very good. Well done, sir. Particularly as it's such a... But please don't mention a doctor or a hospital or a nurse or anything like that, because then we're going to be in trouble. But do go ahead.
It is ongoing.
Okay, I mean, so you're concerned it was poor provision of care, is that right?
Yeah. She got a son and a daughter, five and 6 year old, which, you know, it's, like you say, it's coming up to the anniversary, again, but, one day.
Now, again, I can rely on you. Don't say the name of your employer, but the way he, she, they treated you, how do you feel towards them now, Pat?
Well, something I'll never forget, in all honesty. Mm. The rest of the time, I had to take from this year's holiday entitlement.
Oh, dear God, I'm so sorry. My sympathies to you. As I say, I won't dwell on it, but you know you're approaching the first anniversary. I hope that whatever happens with the NHS, whatever transpires, it in some way offers you some kind of comfort or puts a full stop to it. Pat, thanks for sharing so much. That's appalling. River Profiles, by the way, my marvellous, who supported that man for 12 months. They're steel manufacturers in Gillingham in Kent, so I'm very happy to give them a plug. They probably make plugs. Because that's fantastic the way they looked after that, after Martin. Where's your name here? John, I'm so sorry. John. 2 years ago, I lost my mother. I was at work. I told my boss I had to leave work. I didn't get bereavement time off, and they stopped my pay from the moment I left work. Do you know what? As ever, I'm being informed by you. I mean, this is... Dan, when my dad... Hang on, can I read this? Yeah, when my dad died, I was allowed to go to the funeral, but had to go back to work at 1 o'clock to finish the day. I wasn't paid for the morning I was off. And I'd worked there 15 years full time. So they made you... They docked you the pay to attend your father's funeral and you had to go back at lunchtime. Well, I tell you what. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not going to support it for a cousin you haven't seen for 40 years. But this is outrageous. Alison. I think where bereavement leave gets complicated is when it's a relative of your spouse. When my mother died, it was very difficult for my husband to take time off work, and it was very hard for me, because in the Jewish religion, we have a week of mourning. Yeah, I think it's called Shiva, isn't it? And he wasn't able to be with me and support me. Goodness me. Ray says, why can't we name these bad employers? Because they all have the right to reply. And my colleague would then spend the rest of the day ringing out companies. And if, of course, it was misrepresented, as can happen when people say things on the radio that simply aren't true, and we misrepresent the Nick Ferrari Steel Fabricating Company, we're in a world of pain, Ray, so that's why. Kerry in Hartford. Kerry, what's your story? What's your input on this story? Good morning.
Hello there. My name's Kerry. I lost my son, Hugh, when he was 6 to cancer in 2021. Oh, what you find is that there's nothing in place for parents of these sick children. And what I've been doing since is campaigning for the government to change the law.
Right.
Of course
you do, sir, and you don't have to apologise. And is this the sort of changes that you've been campaigning towards then, Kerry?
Yes, so leave and parents and people and workers need rights from day one when something goes wrong. And, you know, we're trying hard that the government now looks at parents as parents and they should be by the bedside of the child or have time off when the really time is, you know, ticking away and they need to be with loved ones. And like I say, we've pushed this and the government's consulting on it in January, and it's a major step forward for parents of sick children. And one of the things I would say... Yeah. Sorry, Nick.
No, what were the circumstances when you lost your son?
He just made his 6th birthday.
But as regards your employers or your wife?
I'm an employer.
Oh, you are the employer. I see.
I am the employer. I'm the company.
Right.
But I know with employees that we've had, there is no set precedence, and you know... Someone who feels grief as they do from all over their face, and it's just we speak to parents every single day that and carers and uncles and aunties and everything that suffer the same sort of grievance that we did, and we're just fighting for better so they get the time they need.
Where can people get more details, Kerry?
If they can go to It's Never You as a charity that we set up, because you always think it's someone else, it's never you,
yes.
And that was the same with us. And they can look at Hughes Law and search it on the websites, they can get all of it. And just one thing that I want to add that the government are looking into is that if your child dies and you're receiving disability living allowance, that day of the child's death, your disability allowance stops. There is no switch over to the parents to help them get through the worst time financially.
No.
And we know parents that have gone through it, and their first paycheck, they're getting money taken off their first paycheck of what they're owed.
That's grotesque. Hughes Law is what you search. What was the other one? It wouldn't happen to you. It's
Never You.
It's Never You and Hughes Law. Kerry, thank you. You told the story brilliantly. You're very, very proud of what you're achieving. Rick says, my company have always been incredible stuff like this. When my nan died, take as much time as you need. When we had a miscarriage, take as much time as you need. And when my father-in-law died, you must take as much time as you need. My employer is Eligo Recruitment. E-L-I-G-O. Eligo Recruitment. Well done to them. We love stories like that. Sarah, 3 to 9, the time. Sarah's in Croydon. Sarah, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What's the story you're going to tell me? Who do you work with?
I can't really tell you who I work with.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Right, sorry.
No, it's fine. It's just that they're probably listening.
Okay.
I do know that, yeah, it's very hard when you lose someone close. I lost my sister 6 weeks ago.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
And, yeah, but I have been able to have, and it might upset some people, but I've had 6 weeks full pay.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And it is fantastic. And I do just think it depends on your employer.
And did they quibble or did they say, Sarah, you just go, do what you want to do, you're on the books, don't worry, come back to us.
Yep,
you...
I did have to inquire because they're quite a big organisation, so I had to contact HR myself, but yeah. They did say, yeah, we've looked into
it.
I love it. 6 weeks full pay, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And it has given me the time that I've needed to sort out funerals. I've never known it to be so tedious, but it is. It's very emotional.
It's horrific.
For me to support mum, but yeah, I've done it. Yeah.
I've had to do two brothers and a mum. It is horrific, the procedure you go through. How wonderful. I understand you don't want to name them. If you change your mind, sling me a quick email or a text and I will do it. But how wonderful, and I hope you come to terms. It's still so fresh, isn't it? Let's get one more. Thanks, Sarah. Niroshan is in Ilford. Niroshan, are your boss or bosses, are they good? What's happened to you? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Nick. Long time listener, first time caller. Oh,
good to have you on. Thank you. Thanks very much.
All right. Okay. I'm just working for a GP surgery in Barking. It's called Barking Medical Group Practice. I'm a practice manager there.
Oh, yes.
So we have a protocol, so normally if any immediate death in a family, so we do give them 1 week off, paid off.
Yes.
Even though if it's a friend or aunt and stuff, so we always, depends on the situation, we analyze them, how they're close or how this affected emotionally. So we do give them as a paid leave, at least minimum 3 days or 4 days. But anything immediate family, always a 1 week. Even though we had some last month, one of my staff lost her father. Oh. So then, we just left her, we give her 1 week off to get all this done and come back to work. Even though when they come back to work, I'll always have a chat, one-to-one chat, to ask them whether they wanted to amended duty so they're okay, they can concentrate. So we are very, concerned about the staff well-being.
Well said, Niroshan. I'm going to ring one readout. Thank you, Niroshan. One last one. Chris, my Gatwick Airport were very supportive when my partner had issues with her dad's health, supported me being in the hospital with her for a few days. You can't value enough a good employer. Well, I've certainly learnt a lot. I'm still not quite there for a very distant cousin, but my goodness, this might be some very important legislation. The music means we must move on. Coming up after the news, to the other end of the age scale, what should be the joy of birth, sadly, and too many instances, is not, as an investigation has found. TV's Marnie Simpson claims she was ignored during the birth of her first child.
I was told, stop disrupting the other women on the ward. I didn't have a voice, and I feel like I was just completely just let down. I feel like I was robbed of having that, magical, natural birth that I always dreamed of.
Plus, staying with our cherished little ones, today's the day a new guide comes out to try and help parents how to potty train. Do we need a government guide? Those stories are more after 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the initial findings of a major review say urgent improvements to England's maternity units have been too slow. Baroness Amos has warned unacceptable care is leading to tragic consequences for victims. Her review is expected to publish its full findings and recommendations next year. Clinical negligence solicitor Bethany Kyle says it follows a string of investigations across the country.
All of these reviews have showed huge systemic issues, and to be honest, all Baroness Amos's investigation stands to do is highlight that nothing has changed, nothing has improved. And what is really needed is a full statutory review and public inquiry.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, who ordered the investigation, says the failures cannot be ignored.
The Ukrainian president Volodymyr Zelensky is due to present a revised peace plan to the US. He has again ruled out surrendering land to Russia after meeting key European leaders in London yesterday. The Met Office has issued new weather warnings for strong winds and heavy rain brought by Storm Bram. Parts of Northern Ireland, northwest Scotland, South Wales and Devon are covered by the Amber Alert. There could be gusts of 90 miles per hour in places. Campaigners have renewed calls for cyclists to face tougher penalties for breaking traffic laws. An LBC investigation found riders routinely ignoring red lights at a busy pedestrian crossing in London. Our reporter Helen Hodinott has more details.
In an hour, at one set of traffic lights outside Blackfriars Station, I've seen 115 cyclists run the red. Just 36 stopped, less than a quarter. Campaigners have renewed calls for much tougher penalties for dangerous cyclists. Matt Briggs's wife, Kim, was killed by a cyclist in 2016, who was jailed for just 18 months.
Normal road laws do not apply to cyclists. In the end, he was charged with under a Victorian law designed for horse riders.
An amendment to the Crime and Policing Bill currently going through the Lords would see cycling offences brought in line with driving ones.
And nationalised trains will be painted in red, white and blue as part of the rollout of Great British Railways. The flag-themed colour scheme will be used on trains, stations and on GBR's website and app. Three operators have returned to public control in the last year, with more expected to follow in 2026. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 96.37. That's down 7. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, the storm moving in, so wet and windy for many parts of the UK this morning. Those more severe conditions in Western Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, 24 cans of Pepsi Max are just £7. That's down from £11.50 with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine on Tuesday, December the 9th. Coming up in this hour, as you've heard on the LBC News bulletins, NHS maternity units across the country failed to provide safe care despite a staggering number of recommendations. Baroness Amos is leading the National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation, the NMNI, says nothing had prepared her for the scale of the failings in maternity care. We have discussed this before, but almost as a warning to other mums or mums-to-be, the importance of what you went through. In other news, coming down the track, a massive change to how our trains and our train network runs. Great British Railways is ushered in. Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander is excited.
But it is exciting, and it's the first time in 30 years that we are going to be freezing fares next year, as the Chancellor announced in the budget.
But not in London, by the way, where it will cost you more than £3 possibly to get from King's Cross to London Bridge. I know some of you don't know what that means, but they're really not that far apart. And I'll be asking you, well, great, in comes GBR with a new branding and logos, but how much money do you spend on your most recent train journey? Some of them are absolutely eye-watering. And then back, today is the day when the government will be telling us how to potty train our children. Do we really need a government guide? Isn't that down to mum, dad and possibly grandparents?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A diligent woman, Baroness Amos, leading the NMNI, National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation, and her diligence of her and the team can be shown. 750 recommendations to reform how maternity care has been provided in the past 10 years. And this is just the initial review. 750. For the love of all that's holy, what has gone wrong in this area? The Baroness says it's staggering. You'll hear a little from her in a moment, because also said this naturally raises an important question. With so many thorough and far-reaching reviews already completed, Why are we in England still struggling to provide safe, reliable maternity and neonatal care everywhere in the country? Now, of course, this is due to devolution. I'm sorry, this review does obviously affect England, as the Baroness says, but we want to hear your stories as well if you're listening in Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, or wherever it be, the whole of the United Kingdom. Now, speaking back in June at the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists World Conference in London, Health Secretary Wes Streeting announced a national investigation.
It's their bravery that has brought me to the place that I am today. I want to say publicly how sorry I am. Sorry for what the NHS has put them through. Sorry for the way they've been treated since by the state. And sorry that we haven't put this right yet. Because these families are owed more than an apology. They're owed change. They're owed real accountability. And they're owed the truth.
Now, this report has only been released while I've been on air, so obviously I've not had an opportunity to read it, but I can read the summations as featured in two of your newspapers, The Times and The Daily Mail, and both of those look at the fact that, sadly, there's almost what could be deemed a postcode lottery here, in that if you're in a poorer part of the country, or if you're in an area where there's a large number of ethnic minorities living, again, you're going to get inferior care. I don't have much more detail on it than that, because, as I say, I'm just reading these two newspaper write-ups, and the report has been released while I've been on air. And indeed, as it was released, Baroness Amos, chairing the review, said we urgently need to see change.
Time and time and time again, families feel that the system has failed them. I am very keen that that does not happen this time. We need to stop this. And we need to stop it urgently.
What jumps out, again, I've not read the full report, but what jumps out in these two newspaper write-ups is that women who've lost babies are placed on wards with newborns. Concerns about reduced fetal movement are disregarded. Clinical teams demonstrated a shocking lack of empathy. Women were left to feel, again, quoting, blamed and guilty. If they lost a child, dear God, this is like Dickensian times, isn't it? Rachel McGrath chairs the Birth Trauma Association. You might have had sight, as you're an interested party, you might have had sight of the report. Certainly you're hearing about it now. Your reaction? Good morning.
Good morning. My reaction is, here we go again. It's yet another report showing that maternity care in England is failing too many families. Failing one family isn't good enough, but this is systemic. Mothers are going hungry, there's dirty wards. Women are constantly reporting they're not heard. And that is something as basic as pain relief. It is also something as basic as, I'm frightened that my baby is not well. And this is leading to deaths. This is not a simple, oh, you require a paracetamol and you didn't get it in time. This is serious, desperate situation for these women whose lives are being ruined by their experience giving birth. They're also experiencing discriminatory treatment. They're not isolated incidents. This is systemic. And Baroness Amos saying what she's seen is worse than expected. And sadly, we're not surprised. We've been hearing this for years. I've lived it.
Oh.
This is not something that comes as any great surprise to me. It's now a case of action rather than yet another investigation, yet more reports.
Harriet, you said you've lived it. I don't want to cause you any distress, but can you share some of what you endured?
Of course, right. Yes. 12 years ago, I gave birth to some much wanted twins. We had a long journey to get pregnant. The pregnancy felt very high stakes. We were so blessed. Mm. And unfortunately, towards the end of my pregnancy, preeclampsia went missed, leading to what's called a total placental abruption, providing a trigger warning for your listeners here. Please do not exercise self-care and do not listen should you have experienced birth trauma or feel right. Traumatized by this. I hemorrhaged at home. I lost a total of 5 litres of blood.
Good God. We only carried about 8, don't we? How many litres do we have? You nearly lost half your body in blood.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I lost two at home, three in the C-section at hospital. Both my children required resuscitation. And giving birth essentially came, I was left with a lifelong physical injury. It was unfortunately proven medical negligence, but that wasn't the case.
Sorry, did the twins survive? I've got to ask this for
the listeners. Twins did survive. Oh, my son has profound additional needs.
Right.
We are living a life of challenges, and giving birth essentially came at the cost of my physical and psychological well-being. It also came at the cost of my career. Mm. I lost my job, I couldn't return to work,
right.
And most people think, oh well, you have birth trauma, you have the therapy, you take the meds, you move on, time heals. No, it doesn't. I was in 7 years of debt because I defaulted on my credit cards because I couldn't pay them when I couldn't go back to work. And we had racked up bills trying to make these babies in the first place. We were now 2 mouths up, 1 income down. I've gained a lot of weight due to lack of mobility, due to the physical injuries I sustained. I also received a PTSD diagnosis. I now can't get life insurance because I'm an obese woman with a PTSD diagnosis. I'm no safe bet. It's prohibitively expensive. So the ramifications of this poor care, this callous treatment, and don't get me wrong, my heart goes out to the staff who are navigating this broken system. But kindness and compassion don't cost anything, and sadly, we are seeing a compassion-fatigued workforce. But Wes Streeting once said maternity keeps him up at night. I don't think he is. He promptly rolled out a men's health strategy. Yes, this report is wonderful. I'm very grateful that it's taking place. But how many more recommendations do we need before somebody gets their finger out and says, let's stop reviewing stuff? But I am all about the reviews because it gives these families a voice. And I would challenge anybody to come and sit in a Nottingham Families Review and hear their stories and not weep with them, because what they've been through is devastating.
What?
I would challenge anybody to do that. I want Wes Streeting to come along to that and apologise to these families face to face, because he should be taking ownership of this and saying, no more reviews, let's make a change.
Can I ask you just lastly, what needs to... I hear you say no more reviews, but so what needs to change? Enough of the reviews already, I hear that. So what needs to change, lastly, Rachel McGrath?
Well, there have been 12 recommendations made in the parliamentary inquiry into birth trauma that was entitled Listen to Mums. If Wes Streeting wants to refer to that, it is all about putting care, compassion, order back on the maternity system map, because right now that is what's missing. Midwifery students are coming out of their college degrees with £40,000 worth of debt and no job to go to. How can that be okay? We need to bring back a bursary system, encourage people back into work, encourage people back into the caring professions, get a maternity czar in place, oversee
it. Do you think czars achieve anything?
Well, it's an oversight, and I think what we need desperately now is somebody, anybody, to take full responsibility, full ownership of the maternity system. It's not just about throwing money at it. It's about looking at what we can do to start rebuilding a system from the very beginning. Antenatal care in women is not there. It's non-existent. So,
I will leave it there. Rachel McGrath, thank you. Chair the Birth Trauma Association. Now, I'm acutely aware, thank you again, Rachel, I'm sorry to have to take you through, it's obviously a hugely distressing set of affairs, but we can only talk about in England, so I'm really keen, if you happen to be listening in Wales or Scotland or Northern Ireland, this can't be just limited to England, isn't it? Surely it's United Kingdom-wide. We'll take your calls. I know, Harriet, you'll be the first caller. After the 9:15 LBC news headlines read by Thomas Watson.
An interim report has found the scale of unacceptable maternity care in England is extremely concerning. Ukraine is due to present a revised peace plan to the US, and weather warnings for Storm Bram have been extended by the Met Office. It's wet and windy across much of the UK this morning, with the most severe conditions in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 25 at the A10 to 23 at South Mimms. The traffic was being held after an accident. It's just been released, but it's still very slow. And then also on the M25, lengthy delays clockwise onto the QE2 bridge. It is still slow from junction 29 at the A127. The A127 at Rayleigh Weir remains closed both ways after an accident and still very slow in Highgate on the A1 Archway Road both ways. And that's following an accident. On the underground, the Metropolitan line is suspended between Moor Park and Watford. There are severe delays on the Bakerloo line and also minor delays on the Central line and also for South Western Railway heading up to Waterloo.
This is LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
The Big Tasty is back at McDonald's, but now it's a double. It's the beefiest Big Tasty of all time ever. Oh, got a bit intense there. The new Double Big Tasty, now at McDonald's. Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, as my contributor said, so many reviews and nothing, it would seem, achieved. Harriet is in St Albans. Harriet, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'd just like to reiterate what your previous caller, Rachel, was saying.
Yes.
I think the first thing to state is that we have student midwives who have just qualified, but they've been told there are no hours for them. I've just finished three night shifts. Where the acuity, I said to your producer, it's not even unsafe. It's outright dangerous. We have, you know, a coordinator and a bleep holder, and we have three midwives on the delivery suite. That is not okay. We're halting our inductions.
Sorry to interrupt. What should, bear in mind, a lot of my listeners, and I don't have experience. So what instead of three, what do you think a safer number would be?
Oh, we should have eight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's outrageous. So
we have women sitting on the induction suite who have been there for a minimum of 3 days. They've had, one induction agent.
And again, please don't be angry with me. I seem to recall my ex-wife was induced, but how long should we be looking at there, Harriet? Roughly.
Well, if I could tell women how long their induction can take, I'd be sitting on a knife island somewhere.
But I mean, just so I get some context, you would normally hope to be there for a day or?
It depends on how many children you've had before, et cetera, and what agent you use. But for example, if you were to use a hormonal induction agent, like a prostaglandin, for example, you would have one 6 hours, 6 hours after the first one, and then you would hope to be able to break that lady's waters. Now, our women are having one prostin, and they're waiting 24 hours because we can't give them another postin in case they go into labour because we haven't got the room and the midwife available for a one-to-one care.
Is it nil now, by mouth once these women have had
no,
these...
No, it's not. No, absolutely not.
Right,
no, we need that energy to live.
Oh, of course you do. Sorry, yes, stupid.
You're then increasing the risk of that lady having, for example, a postpartum hemorrhage.
Right.
You're then increasing the risk of no progress within labour, so you're then going for a C-section, which then obviously costs the trust a lot more money for the care for that lady.
Oh my God.
So it's a knock-on effect. You know, and we have specialist midwives who sit in an office and they don't come on the shop floor and work. So they're being paid, you know, a larger amount than a midwife actually working on the shop floor. And they don't come and help. And obviously we don't have that at night time. But our staff are completely and utterly broken. You know, our women.
I was just about to ask what's morale like. It's on the floor, is it?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Mm. Everybody's on long-term sick. The trusts just don't care about the staff well-being. They're quite happy for us to do the job of four other staff members, basically. They aren't allowed to put the bank shifts out. So the last three nights I've been working...
Sorry, why can't they go to bank nursing? I don't...
Because
financial.
They've been told that there's no money. There's no money. They cannot afford to fill those slots, basically. And it's affecting our women. And as staff members, we take that home, you know, and we give our women... And I think I can speak for all midwifery staff and support staff and the doctors that we try and advocate for women as best as we can.
I'm sure you
we
do.
Take that home with us, hence the long-term sick, because, I mean, we've had staff crying on the wards recently because they cannot give that patient the care. And midwives, you know, with women...
How long has it been this bad?
Years. I've been in the business over 6 years, and it's got worse.
So has it, with the arrival of a new... And I think we all accept that there are many questions to be answered about how the last government performed in many areas, one of which is health. But since the arrival of the new government 18 months ago, have you seen some signs of improvement? Has it stayed the same? Has it got worse?
No, it's got worse. It's to the point where we have absolutely no funding to staff our wards. We are being told by management that they are not allowed to put those shifts out. In extreme circumstances,
well, somebody's going to die here.
That's what we've said all along, and I don't know if I don't know if even that will make their ears prick up and think, "Oh gosh, we need to do something."
If the staff go to the managers and say, "Look, if you don't do something, we're going to lose a mum and or a baby." You don't.
Nothing changes. Absolutely nothing. Our staff can go to management broken and in tears, saying, "I can't be here," and the immediate managers. Their hands are tied. They cannot do anything because, the larger management, if you like, have said, we do not have the funds. We have not got the authority to say, yes, put those bank shifts out. And if they do put those bank shifts out, they'll put them out now for tonight.
Can I ask you a final question? Then you must get some rest because obviously you've put in a hell of a shift. And there's no reason on earth why you should know this, but are there similar issues in countries, other European countries, such as France and Italy and Germany, or is this unique to the United Kingdom?
I couldn't tell you. I'm sorry. I'd like to think that it's not, because I can't imagine all the women across the world having the same care. I really hope it's not.
Yes.
But something needs to be done. And I think, you know, well, I don't know. We're just all broken, basically. And I so feel for the women because I want them to know that, especially in our trust, we care so much and we go home and we don't sleep because we worry.
Your care has shone through, and I'm sure all of your colleagues as well, and the distress and the concerns you have over a team of eight being reduced to a team of three and other issues. Harriet, I don't say this in any way, get some sleep, you need it, you've put in a hell of a shift. Thank you for the work you do, and thanks for your call. We will return to this. But there are other stories, and I appreciate, of course, not every of you have children, or in some of you don't even want to have children. So let's look at other matters, and let's look at the great rebranding of Great British Railways. Yes, it's as of today, and in the first hour of the show, I spoke with Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander, and she was excited.
Today we are launching the new brand for Great British Railways. This is going to be the logo and the designs that people will see rolled out at stations and trains from next year. So it's a beautiful Union Jack inspired design with some of the old British Rail heritage included in it as well, which is that sort of double arrow that people are very familiar with.
The old intercity one with the two lines.
Completely right.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So
you have to be of a certain age to remember that, Heidi.
Yeah.
Do go on.
We've tried to bring that into the 21st century. We've done all of this work in house to make sure that we're providing the taxpayer with value for money. But I do think that it's a nice modern design with that nod to the railway heritage as well. And people are also seeing today, for the first time, a sneak preview of the new app that people will be able to use as part of Great British Railways. We're consolidating all of the ticketing functions of the 14 different train operating companies into one app where people will be able to get information on tickets, fares, timetables, things like, you know, are the lifts working at a particular station as well, in case you have got access difficulties. And I think that's really bringing the railways into the 21st century, because that's the way other people engage with other businesses and other aspects of their life, and having all of that information in the palm of your hand can only be a good thing. It's the first time in 30 years that we are going to be freezing fares next year, as the Chancellor announced in the budget, and it's also 30 years since anyone has taken a really long, hard look at the legislation that governs the railways. And this afternoon in the House of Commons, we got the second reading of the Railways Bill, which gives me the power to set up Great British Railways. That's going to be an integrated organisation that manages the trains and the tracks. At the moment, we've got 17 disparate organisations involved in running the railways. That makes it inefficient. It makes it wasteful. We're going to sweep that away, and we're going to build a railway that is focused on passengers and not profit, and a railway that people can rely on and be proud of, because I know that train turning up on time is the thing that's most important to people. They're fed up of cancellations. They were fed up under the Conservative government of those 2 years of rolling strikes that we saw on the railways. We've reset relations with the trade unions on the railways in the last year, and so we need to make progress and give the country the railway service that it needs and deserves.
And I'm sure the Transport Secretary is right that you are fed up with that, but I think you're probably fed up with high fares. I don't travel on the trains that often, but whenever I do, it seems jolly expensive. Ian's in Driffield in Yorkshire. Ian, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, Heidi, Alexander, Nick, I don't know. We're going to rebrand. I don't know how much that's cost. We're going to have a new app that covers everything. I've already got about 5 apps that cover everything, tell you everything you need to know about the rail network, but let's get over the fluster. In the north, we have to suffer Northern Rail. Northern Rail has been nationalised, been run by the government for more than 5 years, Nick.
Oh, really? And it, okay, right.
Absolutely. It was nationalised in 2020. It was taken off the operator in 2020 due to poor performance. All that's happened is it's got worse. So, on-time performance, I think, stands at about 58% now, so only 58% of trains get there on time.
Tell me some of the major towns and cities it serves, so my listeners around the country get a better sense of what you're saying.
Right across the north. So right across the north, you know, Manchester, Liverpool, right across to Leeds, York.
I see. So it links the northwest to the north. I've got you. Okay, got that.
Right across. Some of the Transpennine does that, but most of the local services, but a lot of the, you know, Sheffield to Driffield, for instance, is one of the northern
you say
services.
It came into public ownership how many years ago?
In 2020, it was in crisis in 2020, and it's still in crisis 5 years later.
Is it worse these last 5 years, or just as bad?
Yeah, Tom, if you look at all the stats, but I mean, personal experience of it tells me exactly the same, but the stats show that cancellations are increasing. Sometimes we lose every single train on a Sunday,
God.
So my son comes to visit regularly for long weekends. He'll come on a Friday and want to go back to his home in Nottingham on a Sunday. I've had to drive him back, I think, 6 times in the last year because the trains have purely all been cancelled on a Sunday.
Do you happen to know, and there's no reason on earth why you should, how much it costs your son to come up from Nottingham to Driffield?
I've honestly no idea, but he claims delay repay a lot, so they have to pay him back anyway, because they never run any ruddy trains, so...
Okay, lastly, and you really are on the receiving end of, I was not going to say poor customer service, you've got no customer service, any hope that this will change things, Ian?
Well, I think their track record, excuse the pun, their track record with Northern Rail proves that they can't manage railways. I don't see any evidence of that.
Ian, thank you. That's the reality on the railways. They're on the wrong track. And if you have other stories, particularly about fares, if you can get... I tell you what, let's look, see how much it costs. How much does it cost Ian's son? Let's look. Can we get the fare from Nottingham to Driffield, please, on a weekend? A weekend return, or whatever it might be. Ian, thank you. We'll return to that. We'll return to that subject. And also, today is the day when the government will tell us how to potty train our children. Should it fall to them? 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news is read by Thomas Watts.
An interim report has warned of unacceptable care leading to tragic consequences in England's maternity unit. Baroness Amos, who is leading the National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation, says the situation is much worse than she expected. Weather warnings for Storm Bram have been extended by the Met Office. Amber alerts warning of a danger to life now cover parts of northwest Scotland, Northern Ireland, South Wales and Dartmoor. Ukraine is due to share an updated peace plan with the US after talks with European leaders. Volodymyr Zelensky says some obvious anti-Ukrainian points have been removed from the proposals. LBC weather, wet and windy for most areas as the storm moves in, the most severe conditions in the northwest. High of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavoured fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
Veterans like me, we all have a story. This is Tommy's. Once there was a courageous soldier called Tommy. But when his service ended, Tommy's battles began. His world was stripped away, and he returned home with storms in his heart and shadows in his mind. Tommy felt isolated and alone. Until your words of support led him to Help for Heroes. Now he can start a new chapter. One full of hope, purpose and belonging. Help veterans start their next chapter this Christmas. Send your message at helpforheroes.org.uk.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
Over 5 million homes are at risk of flooding, yet many people don't realise they're in danger. Even if you've never been flooded before, it can happen to you. Protect your family and home. Prepare, act, survive. Prepare a bag including medicines and insurance documents. Act by moving important items upstairs or as high as possible. Survive by listening to emergency services. Search what to do in a flood and sign up to flood warnings on gov.uk.
As a parent, you want to protect your kids. You know you can't keep them wrapped up in cotton wool forever, but there are some things that you can do, like keeping their vaccinations up to date. Some childhood diseases are on the rise again, like measles and whooping cough, and they can cause severe illness. Childhood vaccinations can help prevent them. So, are your child's vaccinations up to date? To find out more, search online for NHS vaccinations.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
60 quid. One way. Nottingham to Driffield. 60 quid return. Sorry, I misheard you. 60. I thought it was going to be more than that. Mind you, it wouldn't be that much in petrol, would it? This is the fares. This is the reality, isn't it? Robin's in Laxfield. Robin, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call.
Not at all.
My question, if you can find out, you had that woman on regarding the rebranding of the so-called British Railways.
Yes, yes.
How much did they pay these agencies and all these other fancy people to sort this out? It must have cost a blimmin' fortune.
It will be millions. She was at pains to say that it's going to be ushered in slowly, that a lot of it is going to be... there's not going to be repainting of it until it is necessary or they buy new stock. But, yes, it will be a lot of money. Back to your point.
Well, I mean, travel by train, I think it's very expensive. I wanted to go to this, to London Liverpool Street, to a reunion, and yes, it was absolutely ridiculous, over £65, and that was out of the rush hour, that I wanted to get the train around about midday and come back late in the evening. 60-odd quid.
Yeah,
and that was
a
special offer. That's not special. That's not really affordable. It's ridiculous. and the train goes up empty. I've often been on passing the railway, and you can see the trains going past from this, and they're empty. They're empty. So why don't they just fill the carriages with a cheaper fare?
I don't know. I don't know how the pricing structure works. It does strike me that sometimes you almost think, particularly if you go to, like, the big intercity travel, you almost think it'd be cheaper to get a taxi on occasions.
Absolutely, absolutely. Could not agree with you more. All right then, Nick.
Have a good one. Thank you for that. We'll take more calls on the rail later on, but let's go. Thanks again, Robin. Safe travelling on the trains. It's those particular fares you... Oh, here we are. It's all coming in here. I'm so sorry. I haven't looked. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Michael, if the Northern Rail has been government-run for 5 years, which government is mostly responsible for its poor performance? That's right. The free-market-loving Tories, who are happy to see nationalised industries fail so they can sell them to their mates. Not a point you will ever make. But I'm making it nonetheless. Okay, same subject. John says, I've just seen the new Great British Railways logo. Nice work with the union, Jack. Just hope the local council doesn't make them take the flag down. That's quite clever because they are using the flags of the colours of the union flag, I think it's actually called, isn't it? It's the Union Jack when flown in distress, I think, isn't it? And it's the union flag from memory at other times, and we might return to that. But today is the day that the government-backed potty training guide will come in, aimed at reducing the number of children starting school wearing nappies. Guide for Parents is created by the Coalition of Early Years Experts, and the new guide will aim to help parents potty train their child. They'll tell you when to start, how to get children enthusiastic about using the potty. Now, it's been a long time since I had to help with all of that. But I don't know if you'll ever get them enthusiastic, will you? And will provide lots of practical advice and ideas, it says here. Felicity Gillespie is director of Kindred Squared, which is Kindred with a two at the end, a charity focusing on improving early years education. Has your counsel, has your advice been sought on this, Felicity? And if not, why not? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, well, I mean, parents tell us in our annual school readiness research that they want and need clear information. And as you've said, something clearly needs to change because one in four children are starting school not toilet trained. So today is a really exciting day because it's the first time we've had the secretaries of health and education and local government and the early years sector. So childminders, nurseries, schools, parent groups, everybody getting behind a single simple message. And that's really exciting.
Has it always been like this? When did British mums and dads lose the ability, and grandparents actually, to potty train their children?
Well, it wasn't all like this, to be honest. And in the 70s and 80s, 83% of children were out of nappies by the age of 18 months. And, you know, whatever else has
just
changed.
Just give me
in
that number again. Sorry, Felicity, I just want to just give me those figures again, please.
In the 70s and 80s, 83% of children were out of nappies by the age of 18 months.
18 months. Where
and
are we now?
Now we have one in four starting school in reception, not toilet trained.
Right. Okay.
So there's been a big change.
There's been a drop. Right. And why do you suppose that is?
Look, I think it's really hard to say. I mean, lots has changed, hasn't it? Attitudes to parenting have changed. Nappy technology, so it's, you know, babies don't feel wet in the same way. More working parents, you know, fewer extended families living nearby to help out. I think there's all sorts of different things. But I think what's really important is the impact it's having. And that's the thing we need to focus on. That on average, over 2 hours a day of teaching time in reception is being lost because teachers are having to do catch-up activities for children who are starting school, not ready. And that's having an impact on every single child, because of course if the teacher's changing someone's nappy, they're not teaching your child how to read.
I mean, Felicity, I'm totally with you on that, and people going into the teaching profession, they've not trained so that they can change other people's children's nappies. I'm absolutely with you, but does it really need a government guide?
It's not a government guide. That's really important. It's not a government guide.
It's a government-backed potty training guide, is it? No?
The government's welcomed it, because I think they recognise the importance of handling this issue. But this is actually...
They are launching it, Felicity, aren't they?
The experts in the early years field, so the Children's Bowel and Bladder Charity, ERIC, the Institute of Health Visitors, the Local Government Association, the National Day Nurseries Association, the Early Years Alliance, I mean, I could go on.
Yeah.
All the big nursery providers, schools, the BBC, you know, all kinds of different organisations involved in parenting and young and early years. They're all coming together to say some really simple, clear messages. 18 to 30 months is the time when, for good bowel and bladder development, a child should be coming out of nappies unless they've got a medical diagnosis such as a bowel or bladder condition. Consistency is key. They need to be drinking lots of water and having a good diet with fiber. Nobody should be going to school in nappies unless they've got a medical diagnosis, because, as you say, that's not what teachers are there for.
No. Okay. How will we know if this guide is working?
Well, hopefully, teachers will start reporting in the annual school readiness report that fewer children are turning up to school not toilet trained. So the next school readiness survey is coming out in January. So we'll have a look then. This is only coming out now, so it's probably too late. But next September, when children start reception, hopefully fewer will be needing to be toilet trained. That's the intention. And with the whole sector coming together, with any luck, we've now got every nursery worker, every childminder having this tool as the basis for a conversation with parents to say, come on now, it's time to start potty training, because you've got to get this sorted before school.
Lastly, the guide talks about helping, or the publicity says it talks about helping it to make the children enthusiastic about it. Felicity, do you honestly think a child is going to be enthusiastic about potty training?
Oh yeah, it's great fun. Let Teddy have a go on the potty, you know. And if parents are enthusiastic and cheering the child on every time they sit on the potty, you know, a wee or a poo is a bonus, frankly. But if you can get them just to sit on the potty every day, and they can be sitting on the potty from whenever they can sit up. Yeah, it's great fun. Why not?
You share an enthusiasm that you have an enthusiasm I don't know if I can share directly, but thank you very much. Felicity Gillespie is director of Kindred Squared. That's Kindred with the number two on it. Charity focusing on aspects in that area. We will come back to that. We're talking about the railways and this overhaul, major overhaul, rebranding, renaming. Peter tells me it's £38 for me to go to work each day in London, 30 miles away. The per day rate is cheaper with a season ticket, but that's over £5,000. The trouble is, Peter, you've not told me what's 30 miles from London. That would be Dartford or something like that. Maybe St Albans? You haven't told me where you are. Here we go. Hannah's in Bristol. Well, you know where you are. Hannah, tell me about the costs that you have to take. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I thought I'd call in because I just yesterday got the coach as a result of the train being so expensive. So I travel up to London once a week to do a master's course.
Oh, right.
And
if I
haven't booked the train in advance, it can cost up to £270 to get a train from Bristol to London, which is just madness.
Please tell me that's return.
No, that would be a return.
Dear God, that's a lot.
It's madness. I actually once looked up a flight as a joke to see if I could get a flight cheaper, but they don't run Bristol to London.
Right, well, I suppose a cab will get you one way, but probably not. Return wouldn't be cheaper. So we now hear that there's this massive rebranding exercise. Is it going to make any difference, do you think?
No, it's not going to make any difference at all, because they'll keep the prices the same. You know, it's just unaffordable for most people, really. So,
do you mind my asking, when you get on the train, is it, broadly speaking, you get a seat and it's a fairly comfortable journey and it's on time and the conditions are good and you can get a coffee or whatever?
No, in the morning, I think I'm quite lucky because I get on at Bristol, so that's quite far along the line, and so if I get a seat, I'm lucky. But there are times when it's so busy that you can't get a seat at all, and
so
sometimes they'll shorten the trains. Yeah, so you have to stand. So you can book a seat, and then you get on, and then there isn't a seat anyway because they've shortened the trains to half the size.
And pardon my ignorance, what is it? A couple of hours? Just over 2 hours? London to Bristol?
Goodness me, it's just over an hour.
Okay. And do you mind again? Lastly, what did your coach cost? How much was that?
£4.80.
Each way?
Yeah.
So, less than a tenner plays £270.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's exactly the sort of example. I've got to ask you the same question I asked Ian. Do you think this rebranding will make the slightest difference for your commutes from Bristol?
No. No, not at all.
Hannah, safe travelling, whether it's by coach or by train. If you're in or around London, you'll know that I was broadly right. I said suggested St Albans. Also, 30 miles will get you to Maidenhead and to Guildford, which gives you an idea of how much that chap is spending. All right, well, we might take that. We're going to talk potty training. Come on, mums of today. Why would it appear you're so far behind? I'll share those statistics that we heard from the charity with you again after the news. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The initial findings of a major review have warned unacceptable maternity care is leading to tragic consequences for victims. The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, is due to present a revised peace plan to the US, and the Met Office has issued new weather warnings for strong winds and heavy rain brought by Storm Bram. Wet and windy across many parts of the UK already this morning, with the most severe conditions in western Scotland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still long delays on the M25, anti-clockwise from Junction 25 at the A10 to 24 at Porter's Bar. It was after an accident that happened earlier. The A127 remains closed both ways at Rayleigh Weir. That's following an accident. And long delays continue on the A1 Archway Road both ways in Highgate because a car overturned earlier. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line, and that's after a signal failure that happened earlier. Also, minor delays on the Bakerloo District and Central lines. Also, severe delays on the Mildmay line on London Overground, and that was after a signal failure. And Southwestern Railway services are suffering with minor delays northbound from Wimbledon up to Waterloo.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Why is the leader of the UK's staunchest ally determined to be our enemy? And the social media ban in Australia is about to begin.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Merry Christmas, my love.
Merry Christmas, Mum.
Merry Christmas, Nanny.
Happy New Year!
From the UK's first mobile phone call to the first text, we've been connecting you at Christmas since 1984 on Vodafone, the nation's network. The Nation's Network. Vodafone UK. Supporting the nation since 1984. Learn more at vodafone.co.uk/TNN.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. Little bit different. Should be fun. Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £350,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5 p.m. Friday and you could get a call with £350,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822-00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060973.
Let me just give you those figures again before I come to Suzanne, a conversation about potty training. In the 70s and 80s, 83% of children arrived of 18 months. 83% of children 18 months were potty trained. Now, as the charity points out, when they arrive at nursery school, one in four, or 25% of children, will not be potty trained, so the teachers and other staff will have to accommodate that. Suzanne's in Hendon. Suzanne, let me hear, what's your view on this? Good morning.
Right, good morning. It's nice to speak to you.
Good to have you on.
Right. My children are in their 50s.
Right.
We couldn't, it's very simple, we couldn't send them to nursery school until they were clean and dry. Consequently, they were clean and dry at two.
Right.
Right. Not perhaps not during the night, but certainly during the day.
Yes.
And it's quite simple. You have to spend a week, cut out a week of socialising or whatever, or have someone in. You take them out of nappies, and you just have to be at home. And also, we used to put them on the potty. Once they could sit up, we sat them on a potty.
That's what another lady was saying.
The idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's time consuming, but you've just got to. We just used to write off a week, and that was it.
Why? Well, what's gone wrong, Suzanne? Obviously, you and I imagine probably your husband were very committed to ensure that that happened. What's gone wrong?
I don't understand this. I don't know. I don't understand the young kids today. I mean, it takes time. It's spending time with your children.
Do you have grandchildren?
Yes. And I did the same for them.
Oh, you potty trained them, did you?
Well, with my kids, when they were at work, if they were working, I would fill in.
Right. OK. And but, again, is it fairly straightforward?
Some children are easier than others, yeah? It's just trial and error. It really is. But once they start wetting themselves and they can see what they're doing on the floor,
yeah.
And you say, that's not very nice, you know, you need to do it. We're going to, you know, look what daddy, look at, you know, what mummy's doing, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just, it is a matter of, it's time. I'm not saying it's not time consuming, but you need to have time with your kids.
Can I ask you a question that's probably going to get me into a world of pain, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Come on.
Are boys easier or are girls easier to potty train? Does it make no difference at all?
Well, I've got two boys.
Oh, sorry, right, well, okay. Yeah.
So that makes that, I have got granddaughters, but, I mean, if I tell you my older son was trained by my mother because she was very, you know, even another generation, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my younger one was quite ill, so when he was 22 months,
yeah.
He stayed with my mother. And he came back clean and dry through the night the lot.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And, so it's...
It depends on the child, I guess, ultimately. Suzanne, well done. Thank you. Jan, no excuses, but working women are doing it all. When you're working full-time, you have a small window to give undivided attention to try to potty train, like 1 week off over Christmas. If that doesn't work, you might have to wait until your next week off at Easter or even the summer holidays. It's hard. We are doing our best. Meanwhile, Angela in Greenwich has a slightly different take on this. Mothers go back to work too soon. Nurseries can't be expected to potty train maybe 30 babies. It needs one-on-one. I think disposable nappies contribute to the time lag, as using toweling nappies and all the washing and drying encourages potty training. Well, the number of... I've got the figure here. Here we go. Is it something like the amount of landfill that is filled? I did have it here. I'm so sorry. I can't find it. Here we are. 3 billion disposable nappies. Good God. Each one can take up to 500 years to decompose. My goodness. And the disposal of nappies costs local authorities across the United Kingdom more than £60 million a year. Ryan's in Caerphilly. Ryan, you're on the radio. Good morning. Talk to me about potty training.
Hi,
hello. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's something that I think a lot of people or a lot of viewers either are not saying or just missing the point, which is more around, I'm a first-time parent and so is my partner.
Mm.
My boy has just turned two.
Right.
We're trying. We're
is
trying
he dry?
To potty train. Yes. He's not dry.
No.
He's not. We're trying, but
okay.
At the moment, unsuccessful. I think it's more to the point that, no, I can just say from experience, I was never told how to potty train my child.
Right.
And it was only actually funny enough, I'm listening to LBC a few weeks ago when this topic was brought up again and someone was actually giving tips. I actually Googled it and then I found it on the NHS website on how to start, when to start and how to do it. Things like changing your child standing up rather than lying them on his back and things like that. But at that point...
Hang on. That helps, does it?
Apparently.
Over?
Apparently. Oh, so I wasn't aware of that. And at the end of the day, my boy was... were two months off 2 years old when I read, and I was, like I said, it was only because I was listening to LBC in the first place that I even thought about considering it 2 years old. Because we've had all these midwife visits moving up, you know, working up to 1 year old. Why at that point couldn't a midwife go, right, Ryan, or right, Ryan's partner, your boy's turning one now, start considering. Because they actually recommend you start doing it 9 months.
Do they really? Yet, goodness me.
And that's on the NHS website. So if you type in how to start potty training, there is guidance, but no one tells you where it is or how to start it, when to start it. And I think, and at that point then, unless you've got a very supportive family who's willing to help bring your child up or give you the, you know, pass on that advice, we're starting from scratch.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, I think it's a bit of a disjustice where I think someone mentioned, I think it was two or three callers ago, that sometimes it's the attitude towards parenting is changing. I don't think it's that. There's a lot of other factors that people need to consider, where in the 70s and 80s, you had a one person could go to work and hold a household, another person could raise the household and do that. Where you've got more working families with less guidance, it's a recipe for disaster, and I'm not condoning this because at the end of the day, it's affecting education. But people need to just to consider that it's not the fact of, you know, this generation is lazy or this generation doesn't want to do it, because no one wants their child soiling their nappies, and soil themselves, in public in general.
Good luck. You obviously sound a very committed dad, and I'm sure your partner or your wife is equally committed. You will get there, I am sure. Ryan, thank you. Please excuse me moving on, but it's to get other people involved. Catherine's in Swindon. Catherine, talk potty training. Did you have children or grandchildren?
Yes, I had two daughters in 74 and 76.
Right.
The first one was dry at 18 months, the second one at 20 months.
Right.
I had a third child in 95.
Yes.
Who was brought up in disposable nappies, and she was well over two before I could get her dry. The disposable nappies are keep the baby's bottom a lot drier, so there is absolutely no incentive to bother about training and weeing in the potty. If you've got a soggy, wet nappy around your bottom, surely you'd think, I need to get rid of this.
Yeah.
I put it down to disposable nappies, and we've had this discussion many times. To me, it's quite obvious.
Right, right. Why is it so obvious?
Well, because
I have to say, a lot of parents are achieving it with disposable nappies. It's not as if the whole numbers have fallen off a cliff here, Catherine.
No, well, I can't explain that. I'm just saying what my experience was with three girls, 20 years apart, the first two and the last one, but that's another story.
Right.
But I that was my theory.
And I'm grateful you gave us your theory. Catherine, thank you. Let's close almost as we began, because in the first hour we talked about today is the day. No, not just bringing out a potty training guide, but also the everything from potties to the rebranding of our rolling stock. Great British Railways, GBR, replacing BR, but those two arrows, do you remember, which the joke used to be the British Rail don't know whether they're coming or going because the arrows are sort of going both ways. That returns as well with colours of the Union flag. Will's in Nottingham. Will, is it going to make any difference? Good morning.
Oh, hello, good morning. Yeah, no, I don't believe it is. I just got back from Japan, and the lady was on about the app.
The transport secretary. Yep.
Yeah, telling you about the elevators working and everything like that. But in Japan, it's literally like nothing's delayed, everything's on time, and then with like Google Maps, it tells you exactly what platform, which colour line to follow through the station, which sound to listen out for.
I've never been to Japan, but obviously I've read about the country and I've read about these trains. I think they do call them bullet trains. They go like a rocket, don't they?
Yeah, no, they do, yeah. Insanely fast. Like, if you look at Google Maps, I think you're watching it while you're going. It's like you're on a plane or something. But it's like,
What about the cost for that sort of service? Are you paying considerably more than you would in UK?
I'd probably say it's a little bit cheaper, personally. Yeah. Like, I got, like, the rail pass, which is obviously a thing, but travelled all the way down to Nagasaki and back with loads of stops over 2 weeks, and it cost me, £411.
I don't think that's bad, because, again, I've not been to Japan, but I know that's quite some journey, and apparently the trains are tremendous value, and they're on time, and they're damn quick, so well done. Will, I have to leave it there, because I'm done, but thank you for your input. If you missed today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date with the top stories and opinions, but the stories in the order you want, rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it is, I think, unless you can persuade me otherwise, one of those mornings where we should probably just pause for a while and take stock. You will, of course, be aware that relatively recently the American administration unveiled a so-called peace plan for Ukraine, which was, it later emerged, pretty much written by the Kremlin. As we discussed yesterday, they've now revealed or released a foreign policy strategy statement that has been greeted very warmly by the Kremlin. In other words, Donald Trump's administration is currently, if not dancing to the tune being played by Vladimir Putin, then working very, very furiously to win his approval. Why?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the peer leading a review of NHS maternity care has warned the situation is much worse than she expected. Baroness Amos has warned unacceptable care is leading to tragic consequences for victims. She's expected to publish her full findings and recommendations next year. Maternity campaigner Rebecca Matthews is concerned the review will lack substance.
It seems as though it is heading the same way that other reviews have gone in the past, leading to some recommendations, but no teeth. We really need some mechanisms that are going to hold people and hold systems to account. That's what the families deserve.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, who ordered the investigation, says the failures cannot be ignored. Birmingham's major hospitals have declared a major incident because of flu. University's Hospitals Birmingham says it's treating an exceptional number of patients. Figures out last week showed flu admissions across England were 50% higher than the same point in 2024. A man has been charged with the rape of two 14-year-old girls in Bolton. Sultani Bakatash, a 28-year-old Afghan national, is accused of attacking the girls early on Sunday morning. He is due to appear before Salford Magistrates Court this morning. Danger to life weather warnings have been extended as Storm Bram moves across the UK. Parts of Northern Ireland, northwest Scotland, South Wales and Devon are covered by the Met Office Amber Alert. There is already some rail disruption with some lines in Scotland set to be suspended later. Ministers have unveiled a union flag-themed colour scheme for Great British Railways. Nationalised trains will be painted in red, white and blue with matching branding at stations and online. Three operators have returned to public control in the last year, with more to follow in 2026. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, told LBC the new look will appear gradually.
We're going to be sensible about this. When trains are being repainted as part of their normal maintenance cycle, or as we get new rolling stock onto the network, that will carry the new branding. But
in the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 96.37. That's down 7. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, wet and windy for most of the UK as the storm moves in. The most severe conditions in the northwest. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Would you like to know what the hardest thing about my... Of course, you're not remotely interested, are you? Probably just tuned in by accident, got no idea who I am. But anyway, would you like to know what the hardest thing about my job is some mornings? No, it's not that. But the... the difficulty sometimes of thinking that something is hugely important and not having that thought or fear very widely reflected across the rest of this so-called profession, across the rest of this media in this country at the moment. I talking to Simon Marks yesterday about the strategy statement, the foreign policy strategy statement released by the White House, was the only time, really, that I felt seen, that I felt my fears and confusion reflected by somebody I respect, somebody who I think is more across the facts than I am. And there's not a lot of it about. And it takes a peculiar form of, I would like to say confidence, but I think sometimes it's also arrogance, to find yourself thinking everybody else is wrong and we're right. Everybody else should be a lot more exercised about this moment, about this event, about this development. But they're not. They are either ignoring it completely, or in the case of one columnist in the Times, I should probably double check, but they appear to have written a whole piece about this without once mentioning that the national security strategy has been greeted by the Kremlin with undisguised, or at least ill-disguised, glee. How could anybody do that? How could anybody write an article? As I say, I should probably double check. But if you are talking about the foreign policy strategy of your, I'm going to say your closest ally, that's probably not true, but we get a little bit dewy-eyed, don't we, about the legacy of the Second World War and the role that the United States played in changing the game post-Pearl Harbor. But let's just say one of our staunchest allies, a country essentially birthed by Britannia. It's a slightly uncomfortable figure of speech, but a country birthed by Britannia, one of our oldest, staunchest allies, the other half of the so-called special relationship, has got us in the crosshairs, has got the whole of Europe in the crosshairs, in its crosshairs. And we either don't know what to do, we're either so daunted by the scale of this development that we are doing that thing. We're not looking up. We're just looking away. We're pretending that it's not happening because thinking about it is too traumatic. We are, I think in a lot of cases, probably in the British media, people have climbed too far up a pole of absurdity and ridiculousness that they don't know how to climb down. If you used the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, for example, to describe people expressing concern or warning about the obvious direction of traffic, how on earth do you, it's a bit like Brexit. If you told people to vote for Brexit, how on earth do you return to the subject without wearing a hair shirt and indulging in at least 3 hours of self-flagellation, as well as shouting sorry from the top of Nelson's Column for an entire morning? How would you do that if you told people to vote for Brexit, or if you told people to calm down a bit about Donald Trump? How do you deal with the new reality where Brexit is obviously a disaster and Donald Trump has essentially put the whole of Europe and specifically the United Kingdom in the crosshairs? He has, I'm going to say this slowly, he has sided with Vladimir Putin against the United Kingdom. The president of the United States of America has sided with Vladimir Putin against the United Kingdom. Against the whole of Europe, in fact. But I don't know whether we're ready to speak as Europeans yet, as opposed to speaking simply as Brits. And I know that it is sometimes hard to believe that there's any purpose or plan behind this at all. And I know that sometimes it can be quite dispiriting to find yourself searching for the rationale, behind what is going on. But I don't think we can help ourselves, and I don't think we've got, I don't know what else we can do. How on earth do you solve a problem if you don't know what the problem is? How on earth do you discuss what Donald Trump is doing now without wondering why he is doing it? Can you answer that question? That's going to be the phone-in, by the way. I'll give you a quick heads-up. 03456060973 is already the number that you need. Why is Donald Trump attacking Europe in such extraordinary ways? I don't understand why. It doesn't strengthen his position at home, does it? Does it? I mean, it doesn't improve the economy. It doesn't bring down prices. It doesn't do any of the things that foreign policy... It doesn't enhance peace. It doesn't increase the likelihood of peace in Europe, giving Putin what he wants after he's invaded a sovereign country. So next time you invade a sovereign country, fill your boots, mate. It does the polar opposite of promoting peace. I know what you're thinking. How on earth could the winner of the FIFA, the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize, not be in the business of promoting peace? But, well, that's for the judging.